Download 720 WGN. I am Justin Kaufman with you till 11 o'clock tonight. The White Sox played a day game, so we're playing tonight. Got a great show lined up. Pete Zimmerman's here. Pamela Jones. Esmeralda coming along a little bit later. Big news this week, if you did not read the Robert Feeder column, that the Download is going digital coming up here on June 18th. I and Pete as well are moving to the morning to work with Steve Cochran. Been doing that for a couple weeks on and off when there are White Sox games, but it's official now. It's formal that I'm joining the Steve Cochran show.
Congratulations.
Thank you, Pam. Thank you very much. And we'll start that coming up. I'm going to do a lot next week because there's four or five White Sox games next week. And in this time slot starting in a week will be Patty Vasquez with Andre Darlis. So Andre and I are essentially switching spots. So I'm excited. It's tremendous to me to have an opportunity to work in such a historic time slot, to work at WGN Radio and to be on the morning shift. I mean, it's really tremendous, and I'm not one that takes that lightly. And I also am very aware of the radio history and the icons that have worked there, including Steve. So I'm excited beyond belief to be able to contribute to that program. So that'll be coming up June 18th. For the Download, this has been a tremendous ride. I love it. It's as Steve said in the piece, you know, and I know Andrea believes as well, it's, you know, mixed emotions because of our relationships to our audiences. And I know that some people who listen now, maybe between 7 and 11, aren't necessarily listening in the morning or vice versa. So it's, you know, it's bittersweet in the sense that we've developed a great connection and relationship, and I've got to know a lot of you as listeners to this program and been able to bring you the best we can every night, and, you know, we'll miss that. But the Download and its format, the carry out, and probably less than 4 hours worth of content, we'll be moving to a daily podcast. So if you subscribe right now to iTunes or to other places where you can get podcasts, to get the Download podcast that we put out every day, all the segments get podcasted, do so. Sign up at iTunes, because we're going to trick that out. And Pete and I will continue to do segments that will be standalones from the Cochran Show and probably a carry out, and also other stuff that we can do in that space that isn't for broadcast. So we'll have that podcast and keep it going. I think that's a good way to do it, right? So yeah, that coming up. Exciting. But you know what? We still have tonight. I think we might have a little bit tomorrow after the Sox beat the Red Sox. They'll beat the Red Sox. The White Sox are a perfect example of a team that will come in and play spoiler for the rest of the year. They'll sweep the Red Sox in Boston. Watch that. You heard it here first. And if and it doesn't happen tomorrow, I didn't say it. That's the new way. That's the new world order in 2018. No, I didn't. Fake news. Yeah, so tomorrow we might have a little bit of time. And then there are four White Sox games at 7:10 next week. So that when they're at the 7 o'clock games, they blow us out. So there's only one more Download after this. It'll be next Thursday, so we'll have that, and we'll do a little more formal send-off as well before we formally to the Steve Cochran Show coming up on the 18th. Tonight, we got a great show lined up. Nicole Hollander is here. She is my guest at the big table. She is the author of We Ate Wonder Bread, a memoir of growing up on the west side of Chicago. You may know Nicole's name. She's a longtime writer in Chicago, and she's also the author of the cartoon Sylvia, which ran for 33 years. 33 years, that column. It ended, the Tribune ended it, I believe, in 2011, 2010, somewhere in that area. And then the Sylvia was retired in 2012. It's hard to believe it's been that many years since it's retired. But Nicole will be in conversation at the Printers Row Lit Fest this weekend. And before she does that, she's here tonight to be my guest at the big table. How fun is that? That's so awesome. She lives in Chicago. How cool. Also coming up, the Download in Chicago Business, right after the 7:30 news. Tonight, we're going to talk trades and general contracting. This is very interesting. If you look anywhere in downtown Chicago, in any of the neighborhoods, too, it's cranes everywhere. Tons of cranes. Right now, it may not be 2008 when it comes to, or right before 2008 when it comes to the building boom, but it's pretty darn close. Chicago has rebounded, and the numbers of construction projects and sites has just been on the rise. And we'll talk with the General Contractors Association just about what it takes to get into the trades and maintain the trades. Here's a great stat for you, Pete. You like this. All right. I know you're a stats guy. Nearly half. I mean, we're talking like 48% like that. Of the contractors or the tradesmen in Chicago are over 55 years old.
Really?
Yeah. Because if you remember, my dad talks about this all the time too. I think it was Washburn, a high school.
Yeah,
there were trade schools. And those went away in different times when CPS started messing with trade schools. And they really, because of automation and other things, they almost devalued getting into the trades. And you know, that's going to have an impact in 10 years. Mm-hmm. Think about 10 years, a lot of those contractors will be 65 years old. And they'll be retiring, and who's replacing them? So we got to talk about what they need to do to get younger people in trades, because it's a good living. And it's one that a lot more people are looking at as a potential career, not just a one-off job.
Yeah, like my high school had a wood shop and stuff, and that... It was the joke back then that that's where the stoners went the dummies. Who's the dummy though? They're all like have great jobs.
I'm talking six-figure jobs.
Yeah, and living in great houses. Right. They're retired now. Here I am, the dummy.
You're the dummy.
Should have been taking those trades. Yeah.
The dummy's going to be getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning coming up in 2 weeks.
I should also mention, speaking of construction, Tina Svandelis, writer of the Sun-Times, our friend, she has a great Twitter feed where she takes pictures of men watching construction projects. It's
so
great.
Good.
So
it's
if you're a fan of seeing men watching construction projects around the city, Tina Svandelis is a fun Twitter handle.
Go follow her. That's great. Coming up in the 9 o'clock hour, the Chicago Scots. Gus Noble's going to join us. How fun is that, right? Yeah, the Highlander games. The Highlands. Highlander games is a whole different type of game. We'll talk about the Chicago Scots, which is dedicated to preserving Scottish culture in the Chicago area. I'm fascinated about that conversation, which will be coming up later. And then at 10 o'clock, Greg Flamm is Swap Meet. We'll do it on Thursday. Does that sound good? I think it sounds good. We got a whole show lined up. We are not phoning in our final downloads before we make the transition. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. News, weather, and traffic with Pamela Jones and Esmeralda Leon. Production provided by Pete Zimmerman. I'm Justin Kaufman, and this is The Download, a show about Chicago starring those who know it well. All right, we'll take a quick break. We'll come back and do the carryout, so stay with us. It's The Download, 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Hilarious. My favorite tweet, 773, says, "One more frying pan, please." Yeah, Steve Gadlin. I don't know if that's in the cards. Maybe we can see if he can do something, but he's an inventor. He's fickle. He's creative. It's when he's ready to birth an idea is when we get it, right? Something like that? All right, let's carry out. Here are today's top stories. The lawmakers in Springfield may be on summer break, but that's not stopping the parade of sexual harassment allegations from continuing. Earlier this week, Madigan Chief of Staff Tim Mapes resigned after allegations of a long period of time. And today, former Representative Ken Duncan refused to step down from the Water Reclamation Commissioner job he was just appointed to by Governor Rauner. Duncan was accused of harassment while he was in his old job, and Rauner wants him to step down, even though he can't force him to do so. So Duncan said, "I'll stay." To be fair, these allegations were already made public by Speaker Madigan's office at the beginning of the year. Man, Ken Duncan. I mean, most hated dude in Springfield, right? Madigan doesn't like him. Rauner doesn't like him. He just keeps on keeping on. There you go. Tribune editorial called out the Democrats in Springfield for hypocrisy for not standing up and demanding Madigan's resignation as Speaker. As he's had, what, four people from his organization accused? The editorial said if the chief of staff of Bruce Rauner resigned, Dems would be calling for the governor's head as well. Yeah, and that's politics, just like Republicans are calling for Madigan to do the same. I think the more apt comparison would be if Rauner's chief of staff stepped down, what would Republicans do, right? Seems apples and oranges to look at it the other way. Of course, Dems are, all they're going to do is talk. They're not going to demand any action. That's like page 3 of the political rule book. Page 1 is directions to the cafeteria. Page 2, the policy on kneeling for the anthem. Page 3, all talk, no action. Just, I have the book right in front of me. It's right here. You can hear it. The EU is punching back strong on proposed U.S. tariffs. They're proposing 25% markups on several U.S. products, including peanut butter, fishing vessels, and digital flight data recorders. Oh, we're going to have to go back to analog. Oh. Man, I use all three of those things in some combination through any given week. It's just, Europe, you got me again. With my flight recorder on my fishing vessel, I lather it in peanut butter every Thursday. Paul Ryan says that the FBI acted properly in using an informant in the Trump campaign. This is the second high-ranking Republican to come out and say that the Trump-sponsored Spygate is neither spy nor gate. Although both of those Republicans are not seeking re-election. So what does that tell you? Also, Spygate. Such a dumb name. Stop putting gate on the back of everything that's a scandal. We get it. It's like when you throw palooza on the back of an otherwise normal word. Boy, it's so hot out, it's going to be a flip-flop palooza. Oh, going to Yoxie's tonight. Going to be a wings-a-palooza. Or, man, I love lollipops. It's going to be a lollipalooza. That's pretty good. That's almost there, right? That's like one vowel off from being perfect. But that's pretty much it. Speaking of Trump, he commuted the sentence of Alice Johnson. She was in jail for a nonviolent drug offense for life, right? Was it a life sentence or a long sentence? Well, she's out now thanks to social justice warrior Kim Kardashian. She visited the White House and was able to charm the president, who, let's face it, said to himself, think of the retweets alone. It's not surprising. Trump likes to use his power to help friends and celebrities. And Kim Kardashian can be pretty persuasive. I mean, I am an avid Keeping Up with the Kardashians fan, and when she wants to get her mom to call Khloe to help her get on Kourtney's side about the pool party, and yet Kendall and Kylie both don't want to have the pool party, but then Kim comes in and gets not only Chris to see eye to eye with Kendall and Kylie, but also understand why Kourtney and Khloe both wanted to have the pool party in the first place. They want to have it because it was fun. That's the end of the episode. And Kim made it happen. Bring Kim to North Korea. A lot of Kims going on. Be like a who's on first routine. Kim Kardashian, Kim Jong-un. Facebook now telling us that it might be possible that that one post you thought you were sharing only with your friend was seen by everyone. Huh. In other news, Kathy is really scared that all the bad stuff she said about her neighbor is going to come out. I mean, think of all the catty closed group Facebook pages. Oh, man, where's Julian Assange when you need him? Enough of hacking political emails. Hack Kathy's closed group called Catty Kathy's. See what we get out of that. In weather, and these days have been getting better, today was top-notch. Or as I like to say, notch. Today was notch. I've never said that before today, but I have a feeling I just created a new phrase that will be trending on social media starting right now. Notch! Hey, how's that hot dog? Notch. Right? Yeah. In sports, the Sox lost today. I wish I had more, but not a great game. That's pretty much it. Well, the good thing is that I have Twins pitcher Jose Barrios on my fantasy team. So, holla. Complete game. Holla. Cubs took the rubber game against the Phillies today. No Jake Arrieta in the series at all. He didn't pitch. Way to make that work, baseball. Sounds like you went out of your way to make that not work. The Cubs won despite starting pitcher Tyler Chatwood walking seven guys. To quote the nightclub doorman when I try to come through the club with friends, hold up, that's a lot of guys. The Cubs keep finding ways to win. Rizzo with another homer. Addison Russell will not have to go on the DL. That's good. And the Cubs are a half game out right now. The Milwaukee Brewers. The story of baseball, at least in Chicago, has to be the play of Cubs right fielder Jason Hayward. The embattled Hayward was seen somewhat of a bust for the Cubs since signing a huge contract right before the World Series. He plays great defense and gives good extra inning, rain delay, clubhouse motivational speeches, but that's about it. Well, that might be changing. Exhibit A, last night's walk-off grand slam to beat the Phillies. What a tremendous moment at Wrigley. And when you start to put those moments together over the course of a season, you recognize that they could be paving the way for other moments in October. Oh, wait, sorry, November. October's NLDS. Go one step further. Hayward's hitting just under 400 in the last eight games, and he moved up in the order for much of it. To put it in simpler terms, Hayward, notch. Really nailing that, huh? Bears wrapped up minicamp today. New outside linebacker Aaron Lynch got hurt the other day. Should be fine for training camp. But then again, that's if you believe what you read. Pernell McPhee. Remember that? Oh, he'll be fine. Next week. Oh, he'll start in week 8. Oh, he'll play a week. Let's hope that's not the case. Also, Trubisky praised Kevin White. Okay. Also, George McCaskey said the Bears won't kneel again. You know that issue we forgot about, but for some reason the NFL head honcho politicians and the media won't let us? Yeah, that one. Political issues in sports are like top 40 pop singers. Just do the hook again. Just recreate what you did last time. Nobody cares. The Capitals can be the bad guys to close out the Golden Knights tonight, win the Stanley Cup. The Cavs are down 3-0 to the Golden State Warriors. The NBA better start calling phantom fouls on Steph Curry and Kevin Durant, or there's not going to be any more games after tomorrow night. Think of all the lost revenue on free throw clickers alone. Do they do that still, where someone taking a free throw and they click, 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 click? All right, and finally tonight, the Mars rover Curiosity may have just found organic matter on the red planets. Wait, hold up. On second glance, it's not organic. It's just conventional matter. Oh, still good, but probably grown in chemicals. I mean, eat at your own peril. I wouldn't. I'd pay the extra money. That's the carryout for June 7, 2018. We only have one carryout left now next week, so I'd get here early and line up because you want the last fresh carryout, not the 2-day or 3-day old carryouts. They don't hold. This one, notch. We notch. All right, coming up, the download on Chicago Business. We'll talk about general contractors. We'll also talk about the trades and what it takes for that business to get younger. And then coming up, Nicole Hollander will be my guest at the big table. We got a big show. It's a download, 720 WGN. Stay with us.
It's business time. It's business. It's business time. I know what you're trying to say. You're trying to say it's time for business. It's business time. Ooh, it's business. It's business time.
Yes, it's time for the download on Chicago Business, sponsored by Signature Bank. This is our weekly segment where we talk with CEOs, entrepreneurs, and business leaders. They share their stories so we can better understand ours. Tonight, let's talk trades. If you haven't noticed, Chicago, especially downtown, is in a construction boom. So many cranes in operation, so many planned construction projects on the horizon. It's amazing. And this is a huge plus for contractors and tradesmen who don't have to go far to find good, high-paying, steady work. But with the advent of technology and the overall decline in educational opportunities, less and less young people are getting into the trades. For instance, how about this stat? Nearly half of the construction workers in the Chicago area are 55 and older, which means they'll be retiring within the next 10 years. So how can the workforce meet the demands of today and the future? In studio tonight, George Tuchowski and Terrence Roach. They're both contractors in the area, and they represent the Chicagoland Association of General Contractors, which is the largest association in Illinois with a total membership of over 250 people. Terrence, George, thanks for being here. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having us, Justin.
All right, so let's talk right away about the Chicagoland AGC, Association of General Contractors. What is this, and what do you guys do?
All right. Then number one, thank you, Justin. Thank you for having us here. Congratulations on you being able you, to buddy. Energize the Steve Cochran show in the morning. All right. We know we're going to start kicking some butt now.
All right.
All right. But thank you very much for having us here. Chicagoland Association of General Contractors is the conglomeration of all the largest GCs that we have here in the Chicago area, our affiliates, whether it be vendors, subcontractors, consultants, et cetera. We are the quintessential area to go to for anything that's related to the construction industry, whether it be education, political advocacy, labor relations, et cetera. That's how and what we're here for. We're your go-to source for that.
You know, I'm always interested because you look around right now. I live in the West Loop, talk about it. I mean, you can't go a block without a construction site or a crane or anything. It just seems like we're back to where we might have been in the late 2000s before the economic crash. Is that safe to say that you're seeing more and more construction in the Chicago area and it's on par with historic rates?
Well, Justin, if you haven't noticed, probably the new fashion you've seen throughout downtown in this entire loop here is the high-vis. That'd be hard hats, safety glasses, earplugs, etc. All right, steel toes. So absolutely, Justin, the Chicagoland area is in a construction boom. We have more work going on now here than we've had in the longest time. We've got a number of stats that go ahead and show you that. The issue that we do have here is, as you mentioned earlier, and that is, do we have a continuing workforce that can help and support how and what we're doing here?
When you guys are, as contractors, trying to subcontract out or get people to come work on a site, you recognize that? Do you recognize that a lot of people that you lean on at your companies are older, that those are the people that get the job done the right way?
Yeah, that's how the workforce is made up right now. It is difficult to staff projects. We found that as we grow, and Duncan Roach has grown quite a bit, as a lot of construction companies in the area have, and it's become significantly more difficult. And you do notice that the workforce is aging, and we have to get the next generation involved. And in order to do that, we have to change the paradigm of the way people view construction.
And let's talk about that coming up here. You know, when I kind of said in the intro as well, you know, you right now, if you're in contracting, if you're in construction, there's work for you. I mean, there's a lot going on in Chicago. How do you make sure, both of you guys, especially representing the AGC, how do you make sure that the work is done right? And what I mean is, there's so many opportunities here to go quick with a 10-story building, or we got to turn that around as fast as we can, and developers come in and people want to get these jobs done. How do you make sure that it's not a rush job and they're cutting corners and putting in appliances or bad walls and things like that we saw the last time this happened?
Justin, that's a great question, and we really appreciate you taking asking us these questions. The workforce that we have developed here is, whether it be Leopardo Companies, Duncan Roche, et cetera, all our members of the Chicagoland AGC, Association of Subcontractors and Affiliates in the Illinois Green Building Council, we have the highest trained, whether it be on safety, newest technology, et cetera, to our union workforce that we have. These folks go through a very intensive 4 to 5 year apprentice program where they're actually paid as they go through that schooling, and we have some of the best trained folks that you have in the industry.
So that's how you make sure you keep quality, is this idea of the apprenticeships and making sure that from the get-go it's kind of like school but like an internship but on the job.
Training, right? These are paid apprenticeships, okay? You are learning from the best in the industry. I am a trustee with the Carpenter School for the Chicago Regional Council of Carpenters. And if you were to go out and view their facility and the folks that they have training these people and the apprentices that are training there, you'd be blown away. I'd love to have you out there sometime. If you build that base, then everything else comes with that. All of that quality control, all of that quality assurance, and then the schedules are always getting tighter.
But that's my question.
And to build something quality inside of a tight schedule.
Yeah, right. But what I always wonder is that the people that are paying you as a general contractor, they want it on time, they want it at this point, and they want it on budget, if they can, or under budget if possible. And where does the urge, or I guess in hypotheticals, where does the cut corner part happen? Does it happen in the fact that someone who wants a building up is like, I'm not flexible on when this is done or this project is done? Like, when does it happen where you see that kind of stuff, like slap up whatever wall you can?
Well, Justin, that happens all the way along the line, you know, from the time from the buyout to, you know, how desperate a contractor is to get some work.
Mm-hmm. And, Justin, you take a look out your window right here, and you're looking at some absolute icons that will last here, not just in our lifetime, but for lifetimes.
And we're in
to
one
come.
Right now, the Tribune
right.
Tower.
These were built by some of the best craftsmen that ever existed in this world. All right, these craftsmen were learned and are skilled craftsmen throughout the trade, and these folks here, these men and women who have performed these buildings up here, are not the people who have cut corners. All right, these are the people who know and understand what their schedules are, what their budgets are, and will enact procedures and plans to make sure they can deliver to their client what is necessary and what is needed. But we don't get that, as Terrence mentioned, we don't get that without the proper training, the proper education, the proper knowledge, both on skills and safety. Because nothing matters more than safety.
Let's do this. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back and we'll talk about the education side and what it takes to get a younger generation interested in the trades. George Drahowski and Terrence Roach in studio tonight. We're talking about construction jobs. They represent the Chicagoland AGC, which is the Association of General Contractors. We'll take a quick break. Come back here on the Download Chicago Business. Stay with us.
It's business time.
It's a Download Chicago Business. I'm Justin Kaufman. Segment sponsored by Signature Bank. In studio, we're talking about contracting, construction business. Two representatives from the AGC, the Chicagoland AGC, the Association of General Contractors, are in studio. George Drahowski and Terrence Roach, they are contractors in Chicago. They run their own companies here in town. And we're talking about how do you get, with the construction boom, which is really taking over here in 2018, how do you get the next generation of craftsmen to come along? Because there has been, and I mentioned before you guys came in, I was talking about Washburn Trade School and the vocational schools of the past, where that was a big part of CPS, and that died off at a certain point, and it's coming back in certain ways. But how do you get society to recommit to the idea of trade school?
Yeah, like we mentioned before the break, changing the paradigm, you know, blue collar versus white collar. These are great jobs. They're not just jobs, they're careers, right? Great benefit package, terrific wage, lots of opportunity for specific people. People who like to use their head all day long, like to work with their hands. You know, we need folks with strong backs.
I'm out.
So smart, motivated people. People with great attitudes. People that want to get ahead. You know, if you're sitting behind a desk and you're stagnating, and you got that debt, that college debt, and you got one kid, you got another one on the way, and you can't get ahead, you know? Well, here's an opportunity to compete, you know? 45% of the workforce is 55 or older.
Yeah.
We got to start putting people in place to do all this work, to be leaders as well.
Terrence, you talk about almost in a stereotype in the way that a lot of the stereotype is that if you don't really start with this stuff when you're in high school, you know, it's hard to get into the construction business. But as you mentioned, you're talking about maybe a career change, the idea of someone sitting at a desk right now getting an opportunity because of this very unique situation where a workforce is aging.
Great point, Justin. If you take a look at it right now, the Department of Labor came out with a statistic showing today or yesterday that there are actually more jobs available here in the U.S. than there are people to fill those jobs.
Right, right.
And what better jobs can it be than the high-paying jobs that we have here? So through buildillinois.com, you'll be able to view all the possible careers that we have in the construction industry. You know, as you had mentioned, the tradesmen and how the idea of the technology programs was taken out of our educational schools and et cetera, whether it be the sheet metal shops, the carpenters.
It used to be shopping all the high schools, right?
Auto, electrician, those are taken out of the schools. It's something that we need to reinstitute.
How do you do that? You can't even get kids to get an hour of gym a week. How do you get them to reinstitute shop?
So the vocational schools are gone, right? I mean, we know that.
Yeah, right.
There used to be a bunch. I can tell you from my point of view, Duncan Roach, we've had a lot of success with first, second, third-year apprentices that are a lot more mature. Folks well into their 20s that have tried other things, that have that college debt, and they are doing great for us. It's a totally different paradigm from when I started in the trades. Everybody's coming straight out of high school. Not the most motivated, you know, when you're 18, 19 years old, 20 years old, you know, you have a different agenda. So some of the folks we're seeing that are more mature, more further along, and are able to say, you know what, this is a better path for me. This is a great wage, great benefits, something you can really support a family on, buy a home, and get, there's a lot of reward in it. You know, in my history, I would build single family homes, okay? I haven't built any skyscrapers. Now I sit behind a desk. I do a lot of estimating. I do a lot of sales. But to walk away from a house after 8 hours or after a 40-hour week or building that up and seeing that, you're walking away from that and seeing that, that meant a lot to me. That felt good. And 8 hours goes by lickety split when you're using your head and you're working hard.
Yeah.
You're getting exercise. You're getting fresh air. and you're in a great wage.
Let me ask you this, because one of the issues when you talk about one of you get emotional about what you build and how great that is and it sustains you. One of the issues with this industry, and it's not particular to this industry, is the ebb and flow of the economy. You will have, as we have right now, building into construction booms where you can go anywhere and trip on a crane. And then you have situations like 5-6 years ago where no one was building anything because of an economic downturn. How do you, and not in a recruiting way, but you two who have owned your own companies and been a part of this business, how do you weather that? How do you weather the ups and downs and the volatility of the construction business?
So we have the benefit of being in the Midwest, okay? The East Coast and the West Coast is more boom or bust. We're more steady. We tend to see the rise in construction after the coasts do. So there's less of that here, okay? There is a tremendous amount of work coming up. And it's not just because the economy is good. There's a lot of infrastructure going on when you think of O'Hare Airport. There's a lot of big projects, the Red Line project.
Yeah, right.
I mean, the mayor has brought a lot. And that's, built up a lot for him.
If you think about it, location, Chicago will always have it. You're never going to take that away from us. But as we take a look at what we have here and what these careers that offer to us, where the minimum package I'll have for a laborer here is over $71 an hour, all right, up to our steel workers who are up over $88 an hour. These careers are something that will not only just provide you with a living wage for now, but gives you that benefit of a health package and a pension for the rest of your life. We take a look here, Justin. Nobody lives anywhere. Nobody works anywhere. Nobody gets anywhere unless it was something done by a construction industry. And whether we believe or not that is of any importance, just take a look at what you do on a day-to-day basis. It was done by us and people in our industry, and there's no getting away from it, and we need you. We need you, Boy Scouts. We need you, Girl Scouts. We need you, high schoolers, those who have.
I love it.
We need you, and especially our military. It's a great job, and we have some great input from our military individuals coming to us also, sir.
George Tuchowski and Terrence Roach in studio. They're representing the largest general contract association in Illinois, the Chicagoland Association of General Contractors, as we talk about the construction industry. BuildIllinois.com is the website. Hey, guys, thanks so much for being my guest in Downloading Chicago Business.
Thanks,
Thank
Justin.
You so much, Justin.
Thanks, Pam. It's Download 720 WGN. I am Justin Kaufman. Coming up, Greg Flamm tonight. Swap meet, 312-981-7200. He's moved to Thursdays because we were not on last night for the White Sox. But we will have Greg and the swap meet coming up here tonight, 312-981-7200. Well, my next guest will be at LitFest in Printers Row this weekend. Chicagoan Nicole Hollander has written several books in her illustrious career. But she's most known for creating the cartoon strip Sylvia. Sylvia ran from 1981 to 2012 in newspapers across the country. All told, the iconic character lived 33 years. She was created by Hollander, and the early inspiration for the character were based on her own life experience growing up on the west side of Chicago in the 40s and 50s. She chronicles that experience in her new memoir, We Ate Wonder Bread. It's her own story about growing up on West Congress Boulevard, which now is, well, an expressway. Mm-hmm. Nicole Hollander is going to be in conversation with June Hewitt on Saturday at noon at the Harold Washington Library as part of LitFest, and it's my pleasure to welcome her to the big table tonight. Nicole Hollander, thanks for being here. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
All right. So you have done so much in your life, and there's so much to talk about tonight, but why a graphic memoir? Why tell your story now?
Well, here I've had Sylvia's company for 35 years, and she's gone. And here I am. What am I going to do? So I went to a center for seniors, and I exercised, and I thought, this is not going to be my life. I'm not going to do this. And June and I will talk about that at Printers Row, because we met there, and we started writing together, and we discovered that we had a lot in common, even though she was a Pentecostal and I was a Jew, but somehow we seemed to overcome. we wanted to write a book that was called A Jew and a Pentecostal Walk into a Bar. But we couldn't think of the next thing we would say about it.
You got the cover, but that's about it,
cover,
right?
Graphic memoirs. I mean, when I was in college, I was in love with German Expressionism. So it would not be so easy for me to switch to a style which was very tight and orderly. So I had to do something that looked more like a sketchbook.
Right.
And that's what I did. I was fortunate to get a couple of weeks at Ragdale.
And a great writing retreat.
A great retreat in Lake Forest. And they took me into this incredible studio. There was enormous walls and high, and looked out onto the prairie. And before I came, I had gone to an art supply store, and I said, I want some really good, really big paper. And the guy that was there said, you can only buy this kind of paper. So I was more obedient than I have ever been in my life. And I bought this wonderful paper, and it was in rolls. And I went into the studio, and I had a stapler, and I just stapled these long rolls across the wall. And what was really wonderful and freeing about that was that I decided I would just write and draw at the same time. And if I didn't like something that I wrote and draw, I would just scratch it out. There would be no neat erasing. There would just be scratching out and putting something right over it.
There's something. I mean, it is so authentic when you look at the drawings, and they will be drawings of your living room, which is also your bedroom, and other places of the experience of growing up in this house on the west side of Chicago. You get the feel. You do get the feel from it that this is from your hand in the moment, because it is, as you just mentioned, it is a little bit outside the lines. It is a little bit.
Yes, it's a little outside.
Yeah, but in a good way, in the way that this is, you could tell this is almost, in a way, you're sketching your memories.
Yeah, and I was thinking about that. Well, of course, you don't know that you live in an unusual neighborhood. That's just your neighborhood. Those are just the people you know. Everybody who had kids, the kids slept in the dining room. You know, this was not an odd thing. It was not an odd thing for mattresses to come with bed bugs. This was not, you know.
Right.
You know, and I fantasized that, you know, I was such an adventurer that I attached, you know, little carts and string to them and had races. But, you know, in fact, it just was not something that people worried about. There were a lot of things that people did not worry about.
You know, because you could do a graphic memoir about your entire life. I mean, I think there are your fans and people in your life would want to know all about what it was like to write the Sylvia strip, to all the other works that you've done over the years. But specifically, this book is about growing up on the west side of Chicago and the house and the characters that were your family and friends and neighbors, and almost goes chapter by chapter explaining who they are. Talk about why you did it that way, this idea of a very particular place and time in your life.
Well, when I think of growing up, that is the place that I grew up. And it was much smaller than I thought it was. It was just really one building. It was like one Jewish building in the neighborhood, and I thought it was the entire world. And the people who lived in the front part of the building, they had money, and they had blonde furniture. That was the difference. And we were in the courtyard, and we had everything that was, you know, used. And we had, you know, one painting, it was of a ship on rough seas. And I thought, why did my family think that would be just, would show what we really wanted, what we were? What was wonderful about the neighborhood, there were tiny stores.
And this is for people who remember back to the 40s and 50s. This is the west side of Chicago. This is Congress and
Springfield, and Pulaski.
Congress and Pulaski, Adams and Pulaski, right,
yeah,
in that
right.
area. The book essentially goes through the building that you lived in. It's in a courtyard building, so mm-hmm. it's not just family and even friends that come over, your mom's friends that would be at the table, but it's also some of the the people in the building you didn't know as well, or people that you're fondly remembering. I'm thinking of I think it was Harry the mobster in the building.
Yes,
but this was, talk about what you remember about the neighborhood, the West Side, that particular area at Adams and Pulaski in the 40s.
I think that there was very little fear about going anywhere or doing anything. I think a lot of people slept in the park because there was no air conditioning. Right. Of course, you know, the kids wouldn't do that, but the fathers would do that. And I don't think we were afraid of anybody. And that seems odd to me that, you know, as a girl, I would go on the bus and... Should I say this terrible thing? That this bus was full of perverts. I mean, the bus would start going and guys would start going, you know, and you'd give them a dirty look. But you weren't afraid of them. And
that was the price of living in the city.
Exactly.
Right.
And my father never thought a thing about it. I mean, I think what he worried about was when I grew up, you know, what would I do? What would I do to make him crazy? So,
well, the characters, of course, in the book are strangers and people in the building and friends, but family plays a big role. Let's talk about your mom, who held court, if you will, and the table, and she had her friends. I wrote down her friends were Shirley, Esther, and Olga.
Yeah, she was Shirley.
She was Shirley, so Esther and Olga. But they would have these diss sessions.
Yes.
What are these?
Well... You know, no one was quite as good as they were, but I think it really was, thank you, that they liked to use their language, and they liked to kid around. My mother was very, very quick. My mother was unable to tell a complete joke because she got into the first line and the first situation, and she forgot everything, and she was finished. And other people were much better than her at this. But they met each other when they had a job. I was in a cab tonight. A guy was telling me that when he was a kid, he had all sorts of jobs, from finding bottles that he could bring in to parking cars at Wrigley Field. And that's what they did. So they went and they sold subscriptions, and they knew the same boys. They were in a social club. I guess guys had social clubs, and so they married these guys from a social club. And I think that the women were really, really fast talkers, and I think the men just let them. Hmm. You know, I think it was just like, let's relax, let the girls just talk. I mean, I felt like I didn't hear a guy say something from one year, you know, to the next year. My father was the only talker.
Well, I want to get to your father. We'll take a break before we get there. But it is funny. The diss sessions are just the three of them around the table talking smack about everybody else in the neighborhood. And that sounds so familiar.
Does it to you, too?
Yeah, to all families to have that moment, you know, where that seemed to be the entertainment instead of television.
Yeah.
The entertainment was to make comment on what was happening around you. Yeah. In studio tonight, Nicole Hollander. She's the author of We Ate Wonder Bread, a memoir of growing up on the West Side of Chicago. Nicole, of course, the creator of the famed Sylvia cartoon strip, which ran from 1981 to 2012 in newspapers across the country. She lives in Chicago, and she is going to be in conversation with June Hewitt on Saturday at noon at the Harold Washington Library as part of LitFest in Printers Row. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back, and we'll continue the conversation at the Big Table with Nicole Hollander. Stay with us. Also at LitFest this weekend, Nicole Hollander. She's the author of We Ate Wonder Bread, a memoir of growing up on the West Side of Chicago. Nicole Hollander, that name sounds familiar because Nicole is the creator of the Sylvia cartoon strip, a strip that ran for 33 years. Amazing to think about that. And we're going to talk about that coming up here as Nicole's my guest on the Big Table tonight. But back to the book, a lot of the inspiration for Sylvia come from your family and come from the experiences you had in this house on the West Side of Chicago. There are, I mean, it goes chapter by chapter and there's different people. And I want to talk about before we get to the Sylvia part, talk about your father. A real interesting character in the book, with a lot of kind of, I don't want to say old world mentality, but a good example of, he knows kids are going to be curious, so he says, well, give her alcohol early so she knows, so she doesn't become an alcoholic. That's just an example of...
Yes, that's one of his best theories.
So what was your dad like?
He was very quick on the trigger. He was easily angered, but he was also, he knew everything. You could just walk in and ask him any question, and he knew it. He knew the answer to it. My sister said that she would just use him that way. You know, she would just ask him anything she wanted to know. I was thinking about, he also liked, he really liked to make people sort of blow up or feel uneasy or feel as if their feet were not quite steady under their body. He taught me things that I could just recite to people so that they would fall down. He told me very young what a capon was. He must have told me a lot of things, and I don't remember. It's only the capon that I could draw. You know, I drew this rooster.
A capon is a rooster, a city rooster, right?
A rooster really is who's
castrated?
Made for... Yeah, he's castrated.
Yeah, right.
He's made for eating
right.
Because castration makes him more tender.
Of
what
course.
An interesting yeah,
what
idea.
An, what an interesting idea. But, you know, there's a great scene in the book about, you know, your dad being someone at a young age, he told you to be... to be proud of your body, to be proud, you know, have, and you took that literally.
Yes,
you
right.
Took a swimsuit, wore a swimsuit on the North Avenue bus, but there seems to be a lot in this character.
He didn't mean it. Okay.
He didn't mean it?
He didn't think I was really going to do it. He would not have said that, but anyway, he said it.
But there's a lot, it seems like there's a lot where he was well-meaning,
yes.
and the interpretation may have gone awry.
Yes, well, the reality of it went awry. He thought all these things, and he was fascinated by this idea that he would produce a daughter who was free and proud of herself. And when he actually saw me come off the bus in that tiny swimsuit, he didn't feel quite the same way about it. He was surprised
that was the interpretation. How, and I mentioned right before this, but... You know, when you talk about the characters, the women who joined your mom at the table or your dad or your living situation, as you mentioned, you know, in the living room, which was also a bedroom, and that's what it was at the time. How do you think that all inspired you and informed you as a writer and as an artist to create Sylvia?
I think Sylvia is all about talking. And talking, well... A lot of talking she does is to other women. It's that kind of intimacy where you have friends who you think can do no wrong. And I drew them, and really Sylvia is the one who's talking. What I miss about Sylvia is reading the newspaper and trying to find something to write about. And so that made me look at the newspaper every day.
It was a vessel,
and
right.
Looking for something weird. The other thing was that I was totally isolated. I didn't work in this building in the Tribune. I worked at home all by myself. And when you do that, you get the feeling that you are all alone. And you're talking to maybe one other person, and they understand you perfectly well, and they forgive you for everything. But the real people who read the newspaper weren't always so kind about it.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. I mean, I have really nasty letters from people who just got so angry at me over a misunderstanding. But here I was at home. I didn't know for a long time that they were angry. Because they had to write a letter. They had to put it in an envelope. They had to send it to the Tribune, and the Tribune had to send it to me. It was very distant. I feel very sorry for the people now who are right on the immediate effect of what their words have done or what their action. And people are after them and mean.
To see the characters that are portrayed in the book, and that's what I love about the book, is that you do see the same vibe and style because it's your drawings, and you see the same style that were in the Sylvia cartoon strips. Do the characters and the surroundings, not necessarily the material, because that's coming from the daily interpretation of what's in the news at the time, but those drawings and those feelings and those the visions you have for those characters, are they based on this house back in the, on the west side of Chicago?
I think so, and I think it's based on people's conversations. I was just thinking about the first time, I mean, only one person had a television. And so we would go to a basement apartment that was my best friend's house, and her mother. She showed Dean Martin and Jerry Lewis, and I had never seen anything like that in my life, and I couldn't wait to see it again and again. So humor was really very big, because humor was big with my mother. My father was the intellect, but my mother was funny. Hmm. She would just respond to something in a very easy way.
Well, let's do this. Let's take a quick break so we can get to Pam's news, mm-hmm. and we'll come back and we'll talk more about Sylvia and 33 years and all about what it takes to put that character together and to have it thrive and also to retire that character. Nicole Hollander is in studio. The new book is We Ate Wonder Bread, a memoir of growing up on the west side of Chicago. Nicole, of course, the author of the Sylvia cartoon strip, which ran for 33 years, almost all those years in the Chicago Tribune here in Chicago. She's going to be in conversation with June Hewitt at the Harold Washington Library at noon on Saturday as part of Lit Fest, and she's my guest tonight at the big table. We'll take a quick break. Stay with us. Thanks, Pam. It's Download 720 WGN. I am Justin Kaufman in studio tonight, my guest at the big table. I'm very excited to have Nicole Hollander. She's the author of We Ate Wonder Bread, graphic memoir, a memoir of growing up on the west side of Chicago. Nicole Hollander, the creator of the Sylvia cartoon strip, which ran from 1981 to 2012, 33 years.
And she never stood up.
She never stood up.
We have no idea how tall. I think of her as a tall woman.
Well, it ran here at the Chicago Tribune, and I, you know, we're this book and a lot of the fun of reading this book about your eccentric building and your childhood on the west side of Chicago is trying to find the inspiration for what we know to be the character Sylvia, and you kind of talk about that in different places. But where does Sylvia come from? This idea of creating a character to be in a cartoon strip. How do we get there?
And someone who talks back. I mean, if you think about what women were like, she was pretty much different. I mean, can you think of another woman in a cartoon? Maybe Broomhilda, but Brenda Starr, who is a wonderful woman, but no one talked back. Kathy was pretty much absorbed with dating. So she was a feminist immediately. I mean, when feminism came, I put it in the strip.
In 1981, to bring that element to the funny pages, was there pushback? I mean, was this idea that there was a set understanding of what the jokes were in the cartoons of a newspaper? Was there pushback for more feminist idea?
I think you know, the pushback comes with people who get angry, and you know, like some man decided that I was dissing marching bands. You know, I don't know on what basis, but this is that people get an idea that you're doing something to hurt something that they really care about.
Right.
And then I think that there's still a feeling that women shouldn't be funny. You know, I mean, they've got everything else. They can have babies. They attract men. why should they think that they're funny? And who told them they could be funny? This man wrote to me and he said, I hate your strip. Okay. I said, you know, it's really tiny. You could just skip it and look at the next thing. And I was being light. Right. I never did that again because he was not in a good mood. He said, your strip is like looking at a leper. He said, you want to take your eyes away from it, but you can't. And so I never wrote to anyone and said, skip it. That's
it. Well, it's so funny to hear you say this and bring it up again, because we live in a world now in 2018, even this program, you can text me like that. You can go on a Facebook page. You can go on Twitter. You can do 140 characters of how much you could spew as much hate as you like at whatever creator there is. And that's acceptable. That's an acceptable form right now in our society. So to hear you talking about letters that you received, what? She's 25 years ago, 30 years ago, and you can read those letters. It had an impact on you.
Yeah. And I think people spent a lot of time thinking how they could hurt someone in a really clever way. Often they would compare me to cartoonists who they knew I admired. And they would say, you're no Linda Barry. You're no Matt Groening. You're no, you know... I was thinking about the comedies where, remember the one where there's a closet, there's Fred Allen, and his wife says, Fred, don't open the closet door, you know, but you do. Those were the very, no one got angry at that kind of thing.
Okay, well, absolutely, there's going to be people who are going to write creative, hateful letters. That's the art of that has been around as long as time. I'm interested though in the, I mean, you can say, you know, you can reference back to all these different people who might have written letters, but there also was a huge rabid following for Sylvia. The column or the cartoon did gangbusters. It lasted 33 years. I mean, it was a staple.
I mean, there was a group who really wanted to keep Sylvia going, and I have recently. And I don't know, it's a certain time period. There are people who were children then. They were teenagers then. And this last year, I've met them. And they say, you know, my brother and I, you know, we didn't know what Sylvia was, but we liked it and we wanted to see it. And five, you know, I think if there were five people who came up to me and said, we really liked Sylvia, although we didn't know whether it was a comic strip or what it was.
Who was Sylvia for? Who was the demographic? Who's the key? Who when you're writing Sylvia, who do you think the market or the target audience is?
I think of it as being women my age, as being for me. God, we are very inward, the cartoonists, you know. Yeah, I think that, and evidently it's also for younger people who looked at this and thought, I've never heard anybody say this in this particular way, and they wanted to see it again. And I hope that it made them political. I hope it made them care.
Yeah. It is interesting because there was a time in my life where if there was a newspaper in the room, I would, as a kid or a young teenager, would run to the funny pages. That was going to be the way that I would connect to the day's news. Then there's a big swath, and I'll be honest with you, and said this in the 20s and 30s, that I did not ever look at the funny. Yeah. That was the skip of the newspaper to get to the next section. But I think of my grandfather, and I think of others in my family who were rabid newspaper consumers, and they were into the funny pages. So there is this way that on both ideas, this mm-hmm. idea of being 9 years old and maybe being 70 years old, that there was a shared experience.
Yeah, yeah. I was also thinking how much newspapers meant to people. Because I don't see this so much anymore. That my father and his friends would go to a deli, and they would have coffee, and they would be reading their newspaper. So it was a kind of compatible space. They were each in their own zone, but they were still together and compatible.
Yeah, it was a way to relate. not to dwell on the end, but in 2011 or so, the Tribune decides to drop the cartoon. And was it maybe a year later you decided to stop altogether, retire the character?
Yeah, I don't know. You know, I really can't remember whether they decided to drop the strips or I felt that there was something changing. And I didn't see how I would belong. It starts with your editor. You know, you have an editor who's so in tune with you and can really criticize your work and see it and talk to you about it. And then the next editor leaves because she wants to teach yoga. And then the next editor thinks you write too much. So you do see a change, and you say, perhaps it's time to go.
How difficult was it, not just to obviously exit the spotlight and, you know, the idea that you were syndicated in hundreds of newspapers around the country, but to retire the character, to say, it's one thing to say, I'm not going to do this strip in the Chicago Tribune, but it's another to say, all right, this character has run its course. It's time to put it to bed. How hard was that?
I think I never thought of it that way because the humor is the same. And so I never thought I'm putting Sylvia to sleep. It's like putting an animal to sleep. Poor thing, she didn't know it was coming. I guess not. I felt that she was still going on. And when I talk about meeting June at the center, and we started writing and performing pieces together, there's that same sensibility.
The same humor, yeah. Right. That lives on.
Yeah, it does, and I'm...
Do you get emotional about Sylvia? Do you get emotional about the 33 years of the cartoon strip? Do you get emotional about retiring the character?
I am not emotional about it. No, it still gives me a laugh. I look at it. I'm so glad I did it because how many people have a chance to do this? I mean, I cannot whine about this. This was a wonderful time, and it didn't matter how long it lasted. It lasted long enough, I think.
The book, We Ate Wonder Bread, a memoir of growing up on the west side of Chicago, it is this entree back into the world of publishing and drawing, and there is a lot in here that is very similar to Sylvia and the style and the humor and everything that you just mentioned lives on. Do you see it that way? Do you see that this memoir that really pays tribute to your life in this one building on, you know, West Congress in the 40s and 50s, do you see it as paying homage? Do you see it as an extension of Sylvia and the work that you've done in the past?
I really do because I see her as one of those women, and so that really doesn't change. She appears in other women in that building, in the way they talk together. Yeah, I just feel happy that I had the opportunity to do it. And you don't say to yourself, oh, it's over now. You say, what am I going to do next? I mean, you may say it with a little bit of fear. What will I do next? Because I'm not going to study higher math. I am not going to play the piano. So what will I do next?
Well, we look forward to what's next. How about that? Nicole Hollander is my guest. Her graphic memoir is We Ate Wonder Bread, a memoir of growing up on the west side of Chicago. She is going to be at the Printers Row Lit Fest this weekend in conversation with June Hewitt on Saturday at noon at the Harold Washington Library, like I said, part of Lit Fest. A pleasure to meet you, Chicagoan. Congrats on the book, and we look forward to the conversation on Saturday.
Thank you so much.
Great. She was great. Nicole Hollander, creator of Sylvia. She's got a new book out, a graphic memoir of growing up on the west side of Chicago. She's going to be part of Lit Fest. We're doing all the commercials for Lit Fest. It's so fun. I was going after Joyce Carol Oates. That would be great, but she is not going to be. She's not coming in until Saturday. A lot of these guys just come in for the weekend. But the Lit Fest, I love that festival. I know that I love that we promote it. You know, like it's run by the Tribune. That's what part of the deal. But regardless of that, I go all the time. And last year, remember, I had like seven or eight authors on at one point. which is totally fun when you're in the Hudson's books in the airport and you're like, Reddit. There are a lot of great people coming through. David Ross will be a headliner. I know. Rick Bayless, been on the show. That's what we should do. Who's been on the show, right? Paul Kahn's been on the show. Sarah Gruenberg, chef. Let's see. Jamila Woods, that's so great. Jamila's one of the tremendous singer. We've had her on twice, I think, right? She's come through twice. And she is also an author herself. She's got the collection of poetry, which is out right now, Black Girl Magic. It's the Breakbeat Poets, Volume 2. She's awesome. So there you go, right? Killing it. That was just the first page. Now we get to the second page. Ben Austin, the Cabrini Green book.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. Like, there's a connection. It's not just for I'm not just promoting. I don't get paid to promote it. These are a lot of people that have been on this show who have shared their work.
Are you just going to roll and see what's happening? Is that how you do it? Or do you go for a specific event? You just kind of...
Last year I went for, what was Michael Bowden's book? The Hue? Remember that?
Oh, yeah. Do I remember?
Yeah, we
heard about
talked
Vietnam
about it
for a long time.
A good 6 months. I feel like I read that. It's like 600 pages. Yeah, that's how we do it. We usually we'll go down there. I don't really go around like who's speaking when. When I get down there, I'm like, oh, who's speaking?
Yeah,
and I go jump in for 10 minutes.
How people used to do the movie theater.
Right. And I walk around and I'm like, why am I doing this thing? It's so hot. Download 720 WGN. Justin Kaufman here with you till 11 o'clock. Coming up at 10. Greg Flamm in the building. Back to his original time. OG Greg Flamm. It was Thursdays. And we did Greg Flamm and the swap meet on Thursdays. Then we moved him to Wednesday. And no, wait. Then we moved him back to Thursday and then back to Wednesday. So it's kind of like the Starbelly Sneetish. We don't know which one is the original. At this point, it's all just garbled up. But if you got the collectibles, memorabilia, junk, we'll evaluate it.
Have you, you know, as we're saying goodbye to the beloved Tribune Tower, I know we haven't been here that long. Have you come across any old memorabilia? Maybe not ours, but, you know, just have you seen anything that maybe...
down by the dumpsters?
Yeah. People throwing out or
like
on Facebook.
Our old office chairs. That we're so naive. You and I, Pete. We're like, we put stickers. You get these stickers that you're supposed to put on all your belongings to go to the new building, right? And Pete and I is so cute. We put stickers on our chairs, mm-hmm. our tables, our coffee makers, our desks. Or everything that you would think, like, oh, this is going to be valuable. They're still sitting in there.
Yeah.
Because we're in the studio, and our office was actually one of the offices that's connected to the studio. So we actually, there's nothing going on where our office was. We could have stayed there.
Mm-hmm.
But it's funny because there's all new stuff over there. It's brand new. It's beautiful. It's such mm-hmm. a great, amazing, like, my heart races when I go in the studio there because you're up on the 18th floor, and you're looking down on Chicago, and you get this unbelievable feeling, this emotion that you're like connected to the city. And not to say we don't right here on Michigan Avenue. This is amazing. Nicole Hollander, who was just in here, was just thrown aback by how tremendous this view was and how tremendous the experience was of being able to interact with people on the street. But yeah, we were like, we put stickers on everything. We're like, this old ratty table with one missing. Oh, but Gary Meyer sat on this chair. You know, and we're like
crooked light, you know, the light that kind of just leans one way. Yeah, we should bring this.
We should bring this. And so none of that stuff got taken. It's all sitting back there. The movers themselves were like, no.
Yeah, you can't bring this.
No, you don't bring this anywhere. So, yeah, over at the new spot, it's been fun to grouse about where that table could go.
Mm-hmm.
You walk in there and be like, well, I mean, there's this open space right here. I mean, I know it's an open plan for the conference room, but that table with the wobbly leg would go right here. Real nice. It's kind of funny. But yeah, I haven't seen too many things. I've seen the Chicago Tribune. The staffers moved out this week.
Yeah.
They're in the process of moving. And so you've been seeing a lot of their nostalgia and their columns in the paper. Mary Schmeek had a great piece.
Yeah, it was a great one, yeah.
John Cass had some great stuff. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, been there, done that. Bought the T-shirt. We did that last week. All of our posts were last week. We're already out of here. So we're like, oh, God. More nostalgia. No trip down memory lane stuff in the newspaper. Oh. I did the Mincing Rascals podcast today. It's up now. With John and John Williams and Scott Stances. Scott was just like, you know, just pouring his heart out about how he'll miss this place and what it meant to him. And I'm like,
you don't hold the like, same.
Last week, that would have made sense. For us, we're already gone. Although we're broadcasting from the Trib Tower still, because the studios are still under construction at the new building, and we are in the Michigan Avenue Allstate Showcase studio. Till like for another week and a half or so.
I saw somebody post the thing about, you know, like this, you know, this building means a lot to me because it's, you know, where I started my career. It's like, oh, you know, that's really nice. And I thought about it though, you know, I started mine at the Prudential building. Like, I don't care about that building.
I thought you were going to say the Foot Locker.
Oh, at the Chicago Ridge Mall. Yeah, I don't care about that either. My radio career, I guess.
I just, every time I think about going past the Omni on Route 31 in McHenry. It's now a Walmart. But I'm just, it's just something about it. Every time I see a box of cereal that's just bigger than the biggest box of cereal, that's what Omni did. Remember Omni was like the superstore version?
Yeah.
But it didn't go as far as like Sam's Club or Costco. It just made things a little bit bigger. Just like a little, that's a show called A Little Bit Bigger on 31, Route 31, a little bit bigger.com. Yeah, no, I agree with you. I spent almost all of my professional career in radio at Navy Pier. That's where our offices were for the last radio station I worked at. No.
Yeah.
I go by that. I see the aerial shots. There's nothing. It's like, oh, I watch a Jeffrey Bear history of Navy Pier, and I'm like, nah. There's a lot of rats there. No.
Yeah.
No thanks. So, yeah, I find my... Maybe that's a good question here in the 9 o'clock hour. Are you nostalgic for the first place that you worked? Do you have fondness in your heart for the actual brick-and-mortar building? You'll always have memories for where you worked, and even if it's professional, you'll all have that. But do you have fondness for the building? Now, obviously, the Trib Tower is extremely unique.
Yes, for
it's
sure.
It's a historic landmark, so I understand the concept of being in love with this building.
Yeah.
But it is funny to think about whether or not other people they work in the office mall out in, you know, Deerfield.
Yeah, like when you're driving up 94 to Wisconsin, you see all those offices, do people.
It's totally what I'm thinking about, yeah. I was in building number 4 at Abbott Labs. There's so many great.
I don't hold a special place for the Prudential Tower. I mean, it was cool because it was like, you know, I was young and I was like downtown. You're working downtown. That's all great. But yeah, I don't remember really anything about the building itself. I just remember it was cold when walking up this lake.
Do you have any advice for the Trib Tower? People or the Tribune media or not media the Tribune paper people that are moving the Prudential Plaza or Prudential building. Although the way Scott said it on the podcast, he's like, "Oh, we're moving to Prudential One," and I was like, "What does that mean?"
Oh, so that's the because I worked in I worked in 2 Pru, which was the newer Prudential building.
So this would be 1 Pru.
Yeah,
that's so pretentious. Let's call it the Prudential building.
Well, maybe moving to an updated building might have been too much of a shock for all the people, so they had to go to another kind of older building.
Right. So they're in 1 Pru. You're in 2 Pru.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a 3 Pru?
I don't think there is a 3 Pru.
I got a little adventurous today in walking around because I got to work pretty early and I went down to get a sandwich and then I walked around the Pedway because the Pedway connects the building we're in now, 303 Wacker, to all the way down to Michigan Avenue and beyond. You can go all the way to City Hall. And I took a couple of lefts more than I usually do.
Mm-hmm.
And I was able to find the Freshie.
Oh.
A I don't ever know how to say the place. Pret-a-Manger, is that right?
Pret-a-Manger.
Is that what it is?
I heard Steve Grzanich doing a story about it, and he nailed it. I think it might be
Pret-a-Manger?
Something like that, yeah.
No, I say Pret-a-Manger. This classic Midwest Chicago guy. Oh, it's Pret-a-Manger. I got a salad in the Pret-a-Manger. And ended up in a lobby for one of the buildings on Michigan Avenue. I was just like, I don't even know where I'm at.
Yeah. Do you know if there's a way to get from like the Clark Lake or the Staten Lake Red Line to the Pedway? The Pedway, like, it would get me a... I'll look it up.
There is a way. I think you got to hook it up from City Hall down through... I don't know. There's probably... I don't know. You know, Margaret Hicks.
We should have Margaret Hicks on.
I don't know why I didn't think about that.
Just tell her how to get to work.
Exactly. She is a great traveler, like travel guide. And she does a lot of Chicago tours, walking tours. And she's been on the program 3, 4, 5 times.
Mm-hmm.
And last year, I think it was last winter, not this one, maybe the one before, maybe it was last winter, she lived in the Pedway only.
That's right.
For like 2 weeks, where she did not go outside. I think she went up in the building and she saw the sun, but the idea being that she wanted to see if she could live off the Pedway.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, she would be such a... We should have her as one of our first guests, you know, when we get over to the new building. To tell us where we should be, what we should be thinking about.
Yeah, great.
That's great. I love her. She's so great. All right, we'll take a quick break. Come back here on Download. Stay with us. I will pay attention to that story. I've read the headlines, and there are a couple times I started to get into that lawsuit story about the Trek. Now, do I have this right? Do you know the story, Pete? I don't want to take it away from Pam because that she's got it in the cast. But are they?
No, that's fine. You can take it away from
me. So the idea being that the lawsuit, did they sue? Here's my big question. This is my interpretive question about this story. So if I have this right, Trek Bicycles made a tire. They made the tire fatter, if you will, and they called it a... They call it a Farley tire or something because it was big?
The Farley, yep.
Yeah, that's the idea. And they're suing them for defamation, or I don't know what it was. But the question I have is they can't use his name. So it isn't this idea that how dare you, you know, a body image kind of issue about, you know, shaming, body shaming. It's just really about using the Farley name without the Farley family getting any sort of money from it. Right? That's the idea. Because the headlines all make it seem like, oh, how terrible that, Trek did this, that they body that. Because it's one thing that for Chris Farley to make, you know, fat guy in a little coat jokes, you know, and all that kind of stuff that he did, and he made a name. But he's making fun of himself. You know, you can't take that out of context and just call him fat and call tire, we'll call it Farley. That's what the headlines want to elicit. They want to elicit that emotional response from me. But really, the lawsuit's just about you can't make money. You can't call something his name. That name is trademarked. Did I get it? I think I got it, right?
Yeah, because there's only one Chris Farley. I mean, there's only one person you think of when you say the Farley. I mean,
yeah, and
it'd been different if it was the Jones, right?
Right. Yeah. But I guess it's on the media's part because the media is trying to trap me into some sort of, you know, the tire is the fat tire and it's the Farley tire. And they're trying to make it something where that's just not right. But the Farley lawsuit is really just about you can't use his name without getting paid. I don't even think the Farley family cares. So that's it. But that's why I thought that story a couple of times. I was like, oh, interesting.
Fair is fair. You and I will never have those issues.
Yeah, right. Exactly. I can't wait till they have a bald tire for the Trek and they call it the Kaufman.
You know what? We should start something like that.
There you go. That's what it would be like. And I sue them because I want a piece of that bald tire, not that I'm mad that they made a bald joke.
How about let's just go into business? Let's just start it right here. Good. We're going to start making t-shirts.
There you go, a little LLC, right?
That'd be great. And we could like have the shape of your head and it would be like a whole fashion statement. Because bald is cool. I mean, bald is really cool to me.
You can say it, Pam. Bald is beautiful.
Beautiful, especially when you have a guy with an even head.
Right. That's where I might go.
No divots.
It's just a little too uneven.
Yours is great.
Oh, thank you.
Perfectly shaped.
You see, I'm just setting you up to be like, no, Justin,
yeah.
No.
No, Justin. No, I'd tell you. I'd be like, yeah, right. You got sausages in the back of your neck. You can't be doing bald head.
That would be hilarious to tell me in the hallway as we walk past you. Hey, by the way, we've worked together a couple times, but you've got sausages in the back of your head.
I wouldn't do that.
All right. Coming up, the swap meet, 312-981-7200. I am digging on it, though. A bald tire, that works better. It almost works better than fat tire, which is also a beer, right? That's a beer out of Belgium or something, Denmark?
It is. I think you're right.
Yeah. Or that's what they make it seem like, but it's probably done in like Colorado or something like that. It is a Colorado beer, isn't it? It's a Belgium, Colorado. Right. But yeah, but again, I love about that story, and that's we were kind of talking about some, I forgot which story in the carryout, this idea of the way that the media likes to manipulate these headlines. And that's one of them where they want to make it all about fat shaming. It's all about body shaming. That's what the headlines want you to lead you to believe that what this lawsuit's about. But it's not. It's just, you can't make money off that name. I wish it was more of a societal check against Trek to say, hey, come on, man. That's ridiculous to name a tire Farley. We know what you're doing. But if there wasn't a lawsuit, no one would care. It's not like we'd all be like out there protesting in front of the Trek shop. I don't know if they have those. I don't know. Trek shop. Right. All right. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. The text coming in. Excited. To the announcement, we kind of mentioned it at the top of the show, and I always wonder how many people actually pay attention to Rob Feeder. A million do. I know for a fact. I mean, so many people pay attention to it. It's the industry standard. But as he mentioned yesterday, there's some WGN programming changes coming up here. I and Pete Zimmerman as well will be moving to the Steve Cochran Show coming up here on the 18th. And we will be co-host, contributor, and Pete will be producing, and we will be doing the 6 to 10 shift in the morning. Now, what the download will move to a podcast, a daily podcast. That's something that we really wanted to do because we can do interviews not unlike we just did with Nicole Hollander, where we can do a little bit spread out, where it doesn't necessarily fit into the format of a morning show where you're doing two-hour interviews at 6 in the morning. Might not fit the pace in what you're looking for. But we'll be able to bring you those kind of things, maybe the carry out of those things. And then we'll take some of the other elements we have from the download and we'll bring it to the Cochran Show, and we'll continue the great stuff they do on that show, and we'll make some great morning radio. I'm very excited about it coming up. And so that means that Patty, which is awesome, Patty Vasquez and Andrea Darlis start a new show, the two of them together, on the 18th of June. And they will be doing it. Now, here's how it works. I had a couple of texts asking about this. They'll be doing the 7 to 11. But the difference between what we did and what they're going to do is that when we're preempted by Sox, Patty would come on after us. There wasn't we didn't come on after. So they'll be doing 7 to 11, but when there's a Sox game and the Sox game is over, they will stay on till 1 o'clock in the morning. So they're going to be doing a shift of like 7 to 11 or like 10:30 to 1 in the morning. And when they do the 7 o'clock, at 11 o'clock, they'll do a new show called Nightside, which will be a collection of taped pieces. Maybe some stuff from the download podcast, other things that WGN Plus, but also WGN does throughout the day. Hosted by, I think the idea was it would be hosted by somebody and they would throw to the taped pieces. So that's what we're doing. Does that make sense? As 870 said, I follow Robert Feeder down here in Arkansas. Or as my mom says, Robert Fetter. I love when she does that. I saw the Robert Fetter piece. All right. So everyone got it? Everyone on the board? All right, good. It's going to be fun. It's going to be exciting. It's going to be a great summer here on 720 WGN. Thanks, Pam. It's Download 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Great comment about the Chris Farley tires. Someone actually comes to the defense of the lawsuit, or a Trek. Not Trek, Trek. I get if this is 630. I get it if Trek's getting sued for making the Chris Farley tire. But just the last name, even if that production, besides Farley down by the river, bike is so cleanly linked to someone, and probably they're all out of order. It's okay. It's a long text. But essentially saying, where are we at in this world where a last name can, you know, be trademarked in the form that you essentially, the person says, like, if I say I have a dream, do I have to give money to Martin Luther King family? I think it's a good point, but it's a bigger tire. They're putting a bigger tire on a bike and calling it the Farley. They're not just calling it the Farley because they're like, that's a fun name. Farley. What a fun name. Right? I mean, they're that's what the suit's about, that they're obviously trying to make money off of somebody's name. If they did a Martin Luther King I Have a Dream cheeseburger, and they called
there.
It, yeah, and I Have a Dream cheeseburger, and Burger King said, I Have a Dream cheeseburger, I would assume that the estate of Martin Luther King could probably slap a trademark lawsuit on to say, you can't take my words or my image or my likeness or my name and sell cheeseburgers, right? I mean, I don't think that that's out of line. I don't think it falls into this overly lawsuited world we live in now. I think that that's a proper lawsuit. If the company does not have any connection to the word Farley and they use it to sell a product that has nothing to do with that name, that of course is in the zeitgeist and we know who he is, and but he did make his name on his talent and his skill and his product, so you can't use it this out of nowhere to sell a bike, even if you're trying to be cute.
Say you went to the Trek shop and you wanted to upgrade to a bigger tire.
Should we role play? You want me to role play? yeah, I just want to get a bigger tire.
And then, so you're looking at the brands, you know, and then you see one that's big, that's Farley. Would you automatically think, oh, I wonder if that's named after Chris Farley, though?
I don't know. I think you would, because they probably, I don't know. I haven't been to the Trek shop, but I would assume that they try to wink and nod to let you know, I mean,
maybe a picture of him.
Yeah, maybe not a picture, but they're, I don't know. I mean, I guess you could make the argument, could you sue a sandwich shop? You know, could you say, if let's say that they're, let's say this, you go down to one of the Pedway shops down here, the sandwich shop, and the sandwich shop says, number four is a Farley. In it never, that's all it says, Farley, the Farley. And in it, it's a bigger sandwich than usual with a lot more roast beef and mayonnaise that was found by the river or something. I don't know. Garbage like that. Can you sue him for that? Can you sue? I mean, I don't know, because the sandwich shop does that kind of cutesy stuff all the time.
Yeah, that classic Curb Your Enthusiasm episode where somebody named a sandwich after Larry David, and he didn't like the sandwich. He didn't like the capers.
So good.
So he's mad. He was mad about that.
Oh, that show's so great.
Yeah, they do that. That's the thing. Yeah, I don't know. You're making money off the name.
Yeah, I don't know. I wonder on that. Certainly Paul Farvar, you know, who's on Patty all the time. He's also a lawyer. I wonder, can you do that? I mean, is it so small potatoes that you're making nothing that it's not worth the legal fees for Larry David to complain about, or Chris Farley Estate to complain about a sandwich? I don't know. Trek's a pretty big company.
Yeah.
But let's say that they made a Farley sandwich at Subway and they sold it all around the country, you know, and they did it everywhere and they did, you know, millions and millions of dollars in sales of this large sandwich. I think they could sue them.
And if you went to the Trek shop and you were like, I just want a regular, I want a skinny tire,
right?
And it's named the Neelan or something, would you think like, oh,
Kevin Neelan's? I would sue if I were Kevin Neelan. I'd be like, hey, you're making money off my name.
Yeah. Got to be protective of what you've built.
Did I tell you when I was in, I don't know if I said it here when we were in New York this last time through, then we saw Colin Quinn?
Yeah.
I was just thinking Kevin Nealon and Chris Farley. This where I yesterday we had a Sox game, so we were not on the air, and I volunteered, and I don't want to make a big deal about this, guys, because I know how much, I mean, this is such a good deed on my part, but I volunteered to be a chaperone for the fifth grade field trip. I know, Pete. I know you look at me differently now because I'm such an altruistic guy.
That's pretty admirable.
No, I was excited to do it, and it worked out well. The hardest part about it, by far, because it was a fun and I want to get into it and talk about it, but the hardest part was that the Robert Feeder piece about our show
to
the morning.
Down.
It happened at 6 a.m. when we were on the bus going to Springfield.
So you got all these kids.
So luckily, you know, you got a 3-hour bus ride.
But you're not paying attention to anything.
No, the kids are they're not 4. They're 11, 10 and 11.
But you know, that's when they're rowdy, aren't they?
Yeah,
mooning people.
They get rowdy on the way back. They're not mooning.
They're tired on the way down there. Yeah.
They're feeling it out on the way down. They're like, I don't know what's going on, that kind of thing. But I was able to at least craft together a Facebook post. Yes, it's the news is true, that kind of thing. But so anyway, the fun part about it was we were going to Springfield, and I've been to Springfield many a times. A lot of the chaperones, a lot of the kids have never been. Some of the teachers have never been. Like, this was a real first trip, and they'd organized a really good trip. The idea was to go to the state capitol building, the rotunda, to then go to the old capitol where Obama made his speech to run for president. And then the Lincoln Tomb, which was amazing. I loved it. I was totally blown away.
Great.
The Lincoln Library, and then I'm missing one in there, too. Lincoln's home. Like, they recreate where his home was. And Lincoln Library. I hadn't been to any of that stuff. I'd been to the State House because I used to do broadcasts out of there, and I'd covered stuff from the state. And I was surprised because I went in there, and it was empty, totally empty. And on the way down, I thought it'd be fun if so I put a couple emails into state reps or to state senators who've been on the program, whatever, to be like, hey, if you're in Springfield, it would be really great if you could come out, and it's 10-year-olds because they're not going to know who you are. but
still, yeah.
And each one was like, no, we're not in Springfield. The session ended
on May
31st.
Yeah, right. Yeah, they're gone.
Like the May 31st at 1
yeah.
o'clock.
Yeah, like, whatever. Yeah.
We're gone and we ain't coming back till 2019. And it was true. You went down there. It was like abandoned.
Ghost town. It's like college town during
spring
break.
I mean, this tour of the 10-year-olds was it. And it was 10 o'clock, 10:30 in the morning.
You expect the tour guide was bustling.
Awesome. The tour guide was awesome. It was great. It told all about it. But yeah, I thought it would just be government in action.
Yeah.
And maybe they're in the other buildings and that kind of stuff. But I was like, and the tour guide told the kids, he said, the session begins in January and it ends on May 31st. They get the summer off. They come back for a veto session for 2 weeks in the fall. And you know me, I make those jokes all the time. And I get the concept. And when I was down there, I was articulating it to one of the kids. I'm like, they set the laws for the year. They don't need to be there all year to set laws. They set the laws. That's what the session is for. If they need to get that stuff done by May 31st, and then the laws we're set.
Mm-hmm.
You don't need to be down there. We're set. We're good to go. But I was amazed. I'm like, the heating bill, the cooling bills, the cleaning, all that kind of stuff for an abandoned building for 4 months. And I mean, they're better budgeters than I, although maybe not. But this idea that I would hope they're shutting the windows or opening the windows. I don't know, whatever you do to save money in whatever form, but I was like amazed that there was nobody in that building. I saw 14 people maybe in this huge building while we were there.
Yeah, that doesn't seem right.
No, it doesn't. So that was just the State House. We went to the old State House, and it's so funny, dude. We'll take a break, and I'll tell you the funny things that happened in the next three things in the life of a chaperone. And I know, I get it. I truly am a mensch. I appreciate everybody recognizing that. Download 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman, talking about my trip to Springfield with the fifth graders. Took the bus down there yesterday. A little chaperoning, no big deal. Got to the State House Rotunda, did all that, and then went to the next place was the old State Capitol, which was it was really interesting too. A lot of great stuff in there. But they did the kids sit down, and they sit down with a Ulysses S. Grant impersonator, and the impersonator has like another major that's next to him, and they pretend they're so they're wearing Civil War like outfits, and he's Ulysses S. Grant, right? And right away the teacher is like, well, we've got about 25-30 minutes. Like, I was right by the convo, and you could tell that the actor was a little exasperated. He's like, oh, this is a 2.5 hour bit, you know, and I start from the beginning. So he starts into it, right? And he starts getting into like all these really interesting things. I found myself as a journalist too being like, did he really do that? And there's a lot where I was like, there's something to be like impersonator
embellishment.
Yeah. Like, and he was like, no. He was saying in his head, like that kind of stuff. You're like, nah, how do you know? And but it was all about, he spent so much time as a young guy, like a young teenager, talking about getting a job and going into the West Point Academy. But he kind of ran long on time. And so I'm not kidding you, I'm watching this, and he was really good. I really liked him. But he's telling his story, and he's doing the whole thing, and he's engaging with the kids. But he kind of looks at the clock at one point, and he's like, he goes, and then I was put in charge of the Army during the Civil War, and we won, and okay, any questions?
You wrapped it up real quick.
And I was like, you just skipped over the biggest, bloodiest Civil War. And I mean, maybe he did that for the 10-year-olds, but I don't think that was the case. I think he ran out of time, so he spent so much time on what he did in the farm, you know, when he was getting ready for Galena, like all that kind of stuff. I was like, all right. But then nothing about being president. I just skipped all about like that part. Just like, well, we'll get that later.
Yeah, no
so
time.
I was going to ask a question, but we're running out of time, so I left it. I left it at that. But
you were going to ask a question?
I was. I was going
to
be like,
were
like
the kids supposed to answer?
Yeah,
ask questions.
Asked a couple of questions.
Oh, they did.
But I wanted to be like, General Grant.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
You know, like that kind of thing. What was it like being president? I mean, was that hard? Because you weren't a politician. Like, I was going to give him a softball.
Yeah, tee it up for
but
him.
And I was like, so maybe he's like, maybe he'd be like, like, you know, it's like improv.
It's not part of the program.
Yeah, you're not supposed to ask questions in improv. There's a yes and, like, you're not supposed to, ask an open-ended question like that to another improviser. So I was like, oh, maybe I won't. And I looked over, and the teacher's looking at her watch, and I'm like, oh, nah, I'm not going to be that guy who's like the last guy, the John Williams of the conference call, as Mary called. You know, like, it's, I have a question, Todd. It's almost over. But so we moved on. We moved on with the track, and we went to the library. I'd never been to the library, and it was just so amazing. I really, really enjoyed it. Like I was blown away at the Lincoln Library. I thought they did a fantastic job down there. I really did. And they had an impersonator, a Lincoln impersonator, walking through.
Jeez,
and I grabbed my group. I had four kids with me, and I'm like, "Hey, come over here." We were just bonded. I was tour guide. Hey, come here. Look at this. You see this? You see this? You see how this? Remember the house? Remember this now, guys? So the impersonator comes by, and I'm like, "Oh, here we go. These kids are going to have so many questions because I've been talking this stuff up, right?" And he's walking around, Honest Abe, and he's got, hello, children.
Yeah.
And I'm like, do you have any questions for the president, maybe about his house or something we talked about? Silent.
Nothing?
Yeah, and I'm like, hey.
Oh,
come like
I'm on.
Giving him, hey, come on. So my son raises his hand. He goes, how did you survive? That was his question. I'm like, what is that? What do you mean? That's so generic. Like in the log cabins or what? What part are you talking about? Next. And then one of them asked, which is so great, what do you think of the new president?
Oh, yeah. Like that's a John Williams bit.
Yeah, and exactly. And the impersonator goes, well, I'm the new president. Like he just got out of it.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, that's good. I was so down on my guys. I'm like, we did all that stuff. I made him memorize the street corner. That I don't know why, just because I needed one fact. That's what I told him. I go, there's one fact that you're going to remember in 20 years from this, and we're going to make it, what was the streets where Lincoln's house was? 8th and Jackson.
Huh.
That's what we're going to do. So they all remember that. We'll see today. I haven't asked. I should go find them tomorrow at school and be like, hey, can I get him out of class real quick? One question. Where was Lincoln's house? So yeah, it was a fun time, and I really enjoyed it. And the big thing was the Golden Corral. At the end, you could do a buffet.
I
hadn't done a buffet since Old Country Buffet days.
I would have asked Lincoln, like, what's his favorite state? Because, you know, like, you go to Indiana and you go to Kentucky and they take, like, hey, this is Lincoln's boyhood home.
I wish you were there. I wish you were there.
Or Kentucky. Like, Lincoln lived here for a while, too.
Or D.C. with the big monument in D.C. Because the tomb at the Oak Ridge Cemetery, I think that's what it's called, is phenomenal. In the middle of Springfield in a cemetery, there is this amazing tomb that is built sky high. And you're just like, oh, my gosh. And the question I had is, I'm like, what was the lobby like to get this stuff here? Because you were competing with Indiana and Kentucky, and I'm sure someone from Springfield will tell us about what it took to actually lobby to get this to be his place of burial. Even though he's from here, but he's also from other places.
Right.
And I'm sure with the library and everything in between that there must have been some sweetness thrown out to make this the home of Lincoln. Because the guy said, you know, over 250,000 tourists come through, this, that, and the other. And I was like, yeah, I'll bet. You know, like, I want to know what the deal was. That's how we're so trained now in 2018. What was his incentive package? How much of my taxes did you give away to bring this here? It's amazing, and I love it, and I'm glad it's here. But those are the questions I wanted to let the whispering in the 10-year-olds ear. Hey, ask him about the incentive package. All right, coming up, Greg Flam and Swap Me in the 10 o'clock hour. 630s, like, was it the museum or the library, the Lincoln Library? I thought they were the same thing. I'm absolutely wrong, I'm sure. I trust my commenters better than me. It was the museum, I think. It was the one with the two. I think it's a museum. I always just thought it was a presidential library, but the concept of the one with the one and two in the awesome videos and or the films and that kind of thing that were going on in the building there. I don't know if I did a good job explaining which one it was, but yeah, I think it was the museum. So there you go.
It's time for Swap Meet. Oh yeah, here we go. Oh, another man's junk is another man's treasure, like a gold tape measure. When you were a kid and your fingers in your nose, today you're a picker. Oh, it could be comic books or silverware. As long as it's old, has no mold, there's value there. It's time for Swap Meet with Justin Kaufman.
And Greg Flam.
Here we are.
There we are. It's time for the Swap Meet. 312-981-7200. This Swap Meet brought to you by Wolf's Flea Market. This, of course, we evaluate your memorabilia, your collectibles, your junk. If you think it's worth something, Greg will let you know. If you got something you want to brag about, you can win a prize. 312-981-7200. The phone number, Greg Flam at DuPage Picker, both on Facebook and Twitter. Hello, Greg.
Hey, good to be here.
Good to have you. We already got people texting in. If you want to call, you can as well. As we've been talking about the last couple weeks, it is prime season now.
Yep, sure is.
There are garage sales and estate sales. What do you see more of at this time, estate sales or garage sales?
Probably more garage sales, and what's great is there's subdivision sales. So today I spent most of the afternoon in Willow Springs. They had their whole town-wide. Willow Springs. Yeah.
So they open the gates of Willow Springs?
Right. Well, on a Thursday, not everyone participates, but I'm sure on Saturday you'll see the whole town lit up.
So it's essentially just a slew of garage sales under one idea?
Yeah, like one town. Many towns do this. They'll do town-wide. And I think my understanding is they kind of probably give them a free pass to have the garage sale, where some towns might charge you up to get a permit, you know, to have a garage sale.
I think they
just do the one day a year where it's just open season. And so you could probably have other sales, of course, but you have to pay for the permit. But that day, it's probably open.
All right. Well, that's cool. So it's cool that towns do that. Willow Springs, okay. And that's this whole weekend?
This whole weekend. So
I love that idea.
Yeah, it's great.
That's an awesome way to explore a town.
It is, and it's a great way to kill like 25, 30 birds with one stone. So, you don't have to drive between sales. You can usually park and see five sales and then move the car again. And
do they have good stuff there?
You know, early bird gets the worm. You know, today I was a little late, so it was slim pickings. Today I didn't get too many things.
You really got to get there in the cover of darkness as early as you can.
Especially at Wolf's, you do.
Wear dark clothing.
Right.
And walk around Willow Springs with a flashlight. And they really like it if you knock on the windows.
Oh, yeah, they love that.
And that kind of stuff. It's real. It's really the way to get ahead.
Yeah. Shake the door a little bit. They love it.
Last week in my neighborhood, I live up in Edgewater, and they had the same thing, like an Edgewater garage sale where, you know, you just every house can put their junk
What'd you put out?
What'd you get?
Nah, I didn't get anything. But we walked by a place that we were going out to dinner or something. I can't remember where we were going. But my wife saw us. She wanted to get a cow skull. Wow. It's like a really cool cow skull.
Yeah. Like Texas Longhorns
kind
of thing?
Right, yeah.
The horns and everything, yeah.
And then we went, and it was like pretty cheap. I don't know like how much cow skulls are going for these days.
I'll look it up. Right.
Like $20 maybe, right. Something like that. And but then we were like, we don't have a bag. We're just going to be walking around at dinner like with a cow skull. It didn't seem right.
Yeah, that could be bad.
Yeah, so we're like, can we stop somewhere and
brought
get
it to your vegetarian restaurant?
Yeah, right.
Right.
So we passed on the cow skull, but now I'm kind of regretting.
Yeah, that was a mistake.
You know, it could have been, you know, this could have been.
I'll find a good deal for you.
All right. So you can find one for me for around $20.
All right, $20.
My wife's birthday.
With free shipping, right?
312-981-7200. What'd you bring in today? We've got some classics. I see
some funny stuff.
This is a classic Bears right here.
Yeah, the Bears poster. I couldn't find this online, and I've never seen it before. It's a Walter Payton, like, in memoriam poster. And, you know, it's not a classic Walter Payton poster, but it's classic in his sense of humor. Anyone who knew Walter was just always pranking people. So they're at wherever, Lake Forest.
This would probably be, it looks like it might even be a training camp, like a Platteville.
Yeah, maybe. And so Walter's lined up behind Matsui, and he's pulling his pants down. So
great bit.
Sui's trying to hold him up, and it's great, and it's got, you know, 1954 to 1999. It's black and white, pretty cool poster. So
that is, man. That's a nice one. It's got his name. That is a classic photo.
It is.
The prankster.
And I've never seen that poster.
I've never seen the photo before,
but never in a poster form. Anyway.
All right. What else you got?
And I got a Lil Wayne poster that's kind of, I couldn't find that anywhere either. And it's got a saying on the corner. If you'd like, I can read it. Unless you want to read it.
You can love me or hate me. I swear it won't make me or break me.
In quotes.
In quote. Lil Wayne.
Right. And then just Saved by the Bell, classic game, the board game.
Oh, yeah, just throw away. And I also got the Saved by the Bell board game.
Yeah, it's a $20 game, so that's cool.
That is cool.
You get it for a dollar, so that was good.
Oh, how about that? That is a diverse, an eclectic mix this week.
Yeah, thought I'd keep it pretty light.
So I guess what we're asking is for anyone who's got Lil Wayne memorabilia, now is the time to call. 312-981-7200.
Read my mind.
Greg Flam is here, and we're doing Swap Meet. We will take a quick break, come back, get to your calls and texts, and get this thing rolling. Stay with us. Hey, it's Swap Meet, 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman, 312-981-7200. Greg Flam in the building at DuPage Picker, both on Facebook and Twitter. All right, we got a lot of stuff here, man. Why don't we start with already a front runner, one of my favorites. 708 says, my father-in-law has Joe DiMaggio's autograph. You'll love this beat. Joe DiMaggio's autograph on a Chicago police ticket book.
Nice.
You know what that's all about. Sir, you were speeding. Do you know who I am? Sir, you've got two women on your lap and an open bottle of booze. Do you know who I am? Oh, my gosh, Joe DiMaggio. Let me sign that thing in the book. Something like that was a reenactment.
Yep. Spot on.
Yeah. All right, let's keep going.
Obviously, a police book is going to be hard, but a signature, you know, can go upwards of like... One has gone for $7,000, Joe DiMaggio.
Wow.
But a police book is, you know, monkey wrench kind of in there.
Yeah, that's awesome, though. It's a front runner for the brag.
It is.
You know, right away, that's good stuff. 630 says, I have a 1965 edition of Vincent/Mary Price. A treasury of great recipes. It's a leather-bound 500 pages filled with recipes and beautiful photos of all the great restaurants around the world. What do you think? Lorraine wants to know.
Well, signed, they're going for like $70 to $100 signed. So the couple I saw that were not signed were about $50 to $60.
Well, how much was it to begin with? $50 or $60?
Good question. I don't know. 1965. It's probably a $6 book maybe or $7.
Okay, maybe. But with inflation and all that kind of stuff, it doesn't seem like it accrued any value.
Yeah, leather bound. I mean, if it's $60, that's not bad. Tucked it away for a while.
Okay. 773 says, I have Smokey and the Bandit 3 on cassette.
Very nice.
You know, it's hard to find. Maybe a collector's item. Cassette as in music.
Mm-hmm.
Smokey and the Bandit 3, so I would assume that's the soundtrack.
Yeah, soundtrack. Cannot find that one. So
really?
That is a good one.
Someone tells me they're pulling my leg. They know.
But the album for Smokey and the Bandit 3 is only $11, so I don't know how much more the cassette would be. But obviously, if it's can't find it, then you're calling.
As much as they're goofing, that is also an awesome brag.
It is.
Smokey and the Bandit 3, classic.
If I see that at Groucho, I'm buying it.
If you see Smokey and the Bandit 3 on VHS, is that worth anything?
I probably wouldn't buy that, but if I saw it on cassette or album, I would buy it.
Smokey and the Bandit, that whole thing.
Yeah, it's that has propelled the Trans Am thing that just keeps going.
Which are you more of a fan of, Smokey and the Bandit or Cannonball Run?
Smokey and the Bandit.
Yeah, Pete, mm-hmm. You got a thought on that?
Smokey and the Bandit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no Cannonball Run fans, huh?
Really?
I'm looking at the Smokey and the Bandit soundtrack. Only 6 tracks. It's three on each side.
It's a fast one.
Which one was? I guess I'm a Smokey and the Bandit guy too, because that's the one where there's an elephant. Isn't there a zoo animal at one point that they gotta transport or something like that? Or is that Cannonball Run?
You know, I think
which one's
I've
Sally
seen
Field
first.
In?
I think the first, or at least the first one she's in.
She's in Smokey and the Bandit. She in Cannonball Run too. No.
I don't know.
Which one's in Stroker Ace? That's a whole different movie, right? That was another one that NASCAR loves to promote itself. I'm surprised it hasn't done more to promote.
Wasn't there one, like a Kentucky Fried Chicken run or something? There was a movie about that, too. I don't know.
Wasn't that Stroker Ace? I'm trying to remember. Maybe it Stroker was, Ace. Yeah, anyway, a lot of good Burt Reynolds.
We digress on our Burt Reynolds.
All right, let's keep going here. I got a Babe Ruth plate. Okay, this is a plate, like a decorative plate. This is not one that you eat your chicken tenders on.
Right.
It's Examiner Sports. Ruth crashes 60th to set new record. Babe makes it a real field day. So it's a headline from a paper, his face and an action shot. And they also have a certificate of authenticity.
Yeah, the plates are, I'm always like the bearer of bad news with that because they're really like a dime a dozen these days. Like that one you could get for $15, you know, with the certificate and everything. I tell people who are going to buy or collect those, buy them used because they just depreciate so much. If they order them new through whatever Bradford Exchange or anything like that, they always are. They're almost never go up in value.
So you're telling me decorative plates.
Like commemorative plates or decorative.
Yeah, they're not worth it.
Yeah, they're just not holding their value or gaining value. I'm sure there are a few, kind of like the Beanie Baby thing, needle in the haystack stuff, but
I mean, who's not a fan of a decorative plate that you hang from your wall?
Yeah, and they make the holders, you know, spring-loaded holders so you can mount them.
Nice, like a mount.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
But,
I had a great bit. I digress real quick here. It's a comedy bit that we did for Jonathan Messenger's show. I think it was called Dollar Store. It was a storytelling show he did at the Hideout years ago. And the idea is that you had to buy an item for the dollar store and make a story about it.
Ah.
And I had bought a plate hanger, like those spring-loaded.
Yeah.
It was at the dollar store. And I told this whole story about how, I was just kind of like hinting at the fact that, I hate these plates and they're all over my house. And, you know, it's really like a point of contention between me and my wife. It was completely a made up story, right?
Right.
But the best part is that Kate from Schadenfreude bust into the theater in the back, mad at me, and she's holding shards of a broken plate. So the joke was that I took the actual thing off of my wall and broke the plate to get it. That was
that was a good bit.
Good bit, right?
It is.
Strong bit.
It is.
Is a good stuff. Anyway, moving on.
That's good improv.
773 says Sally Field is in Smokey 1 and 2. The elephant was in 2. Smokey 3 only had a Burt Reynolds cameo.
Oh. Download Nation coming through.
All right. 630's got the poster you brought in not too long ago. The WGN and Chevrolet sponsored Black and Blues Brothers poster of the 85 Bears. Any value? It is framed and on this person's wall.
Yeah.
That's classic, and I commend you for that framing. That is exactly what you do with that poster.
Yep, $11 poster.
It's just $11.
It's just $11. There's so many of them. Yeah.
No.
No, I know.
Nobody
I've got
wants to hear
come
that.
To Peloton. I got 7 of them rolled up. I'm not kidding. I am not kidding.
You should give those out as like a calling card.
I almost am. You know, I have one frame to show people, but I'm like $2. You can have it rolled. Just
you
let
should
me keep
just
the frame.
Do like it's a, instead of a business card. You just extend the rolled up poster in the handshake.
Right. And as you know, I have a lot of the Bears posters, so I could do that.
I think that the Bears posters would be huge.
I think that we have, you know, our new offices over at 303. Oh, I think we just like put all old Bears posters our offices.
We should do it overnight and do it in all the common spaces and really frame them real nice.
You should cover the doors.
Yeah, when they come in at set six and they see it, it's all really nice, but it's old 85 Bears posters everywhere.
It's like am I in Hallis Hall?
What is this?
Yeah, right.
Who's Mark awesome. Bortz?
Right. I was happy to supply you with that.
312-981-7200. All right, we'll take a quick break here. We'll get the news with Pam. We'll come back. We got some more texts to get to, some calls as well. 312-981-7200. It's the Swap Meet. Stay with us.
It's time for Swap Meet. Oh, yeah, here we go. Oh, another man's junk is another man's treasure, like a gold tape measure. When you were a kid and your fingers in your nose, today you're a picker. Oh, it could be comic books or silverware. As long as it's old, has no mold, there's value there. It's time for Swap Meet with Justin Kaufman
and Greg Flam.
Time for the second half.
Hey, all right. The Swap Meet here, sponsored by Wolf's Flea Market. 312-981-7200. We evaluate your collectibles, your memorabilia, your junk. You can find Greg at @DuPagePicker, both on Facebook and Twitter. And, of course, the best brag tonight's going to win you a prize. Sue, let's kick us off the second half here. Sue, what do you want to brag about?
Oh, my son has a beer sign that hangs in his garage. Yeah. It's from probably the late 60s, early 70s, Colt 45.
Yeah, nice.
Billy D. Williams?
That's the one. That's the Holy Grail one, yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah, those go for about $340 and up. Yeah. Wow.
And I keep telling them, throw it away, it's junk.
Do not throw it away. Polish that thing. Treasure it.
Such a mom. Get rid of that thing. Now he's like, see, that's why I held on to it.
You're the mom I like to roll up on a garage sale.
Yeah, you should come to my house. Right. Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Sue. There you go. That's a good one. Why is that the Holy Grail? Just people love Billy
D. Billy D. Williams, the Star Wars connection. Mm-hmm. It just seems to be the most popular one. The like neon ones are about $125, so that gives you a pretty good price difference.
I loved Donald Glover in Solo. He played the young Billy D. Williams, young Lando Calrissian. Did you see it?
Not yet. Who played the young Chewbacca?
you want us to go down that again? The Eastern European basketball player. Dave Ennett said was a backup center at Penn State. So the guy, the young Eastern European young Chewbacca, is an Eastern European basketball player. I forgot his name, but he played in the Big Ten at Penn State. He was a backup center, and he has made a career change into playing Wookiees.
He will.
So how about that? Huh?
He'll be at all the Comic Cons, and his life is set now.
Oh my gosh, you're right. I didn't even think about
that. He's a star.
All right, 708 says my friend has the Lakeside Press book collection.
Mm-hmm.
It's missing two books. It's $800. Should I buy it from my friend and take my chances on finding the other two books? What's a Lakeside Press book collection?
I would, if you could talk them down to 600 maybe, because a lot of 10 of them are going for 175, have sold for that. So if 10 of them are 175, multiply that by the whole set. How many did you say he had? I don't know.
Yeah, it's missing two.
Two, yeah. So he's got a lot, and they were like 30, 40 books, I think. It's a pretty big size collection.
What is Lakeside Press? What is
that? Yeah, just couldn't find the title. It's just Lakeside Press.
So it's like every book in Lakeside Press is that's this idea, 35, 40 of them?
I lost my search. I'm sorry.
It's okay. So it doesn't matter.
The moment's passed.
Don't worry about me. But that's interesting. So really, this is a conundrum. It's a first for the for the download, for the swap meet. So essentially he's saying, should I go for it, pay a lot of money for almost a collection, and then hunt down the other two, and that will make the collection even more valuable?
Yeah, I would go for it because it sounds like he's buying a big lot. So if he's only missing two, chances are he could probably find those two. If he was missing 10, 15, I would maybe pass.
Do you have a lead on those, you think?
I think you could find it. I'm sure you can find it on eBay, whichever one or two that you're missing. I'm sure you can find it. There's quite a few.
That's interesting. 708 says, I've got Chicago Bears season program for season ticket holders from late 1960 through 1977.
Yeah, the season ticket, I couldn't find like the whole season, oddly enough. I found like media guides for the year, but otherwise you're looking at individual games, of course. So if you could send a picture maybe of that, like one of the seasons.
Would 77 be Peyton's rookie year?
Not sure. Is that the
I feel like that's either, maybe coach? It's even earlier than that, 75 maybe. Didn't they go to the playoffs somewhere in the middle of the 70s? I just remember the early days of Peyton in the late 70s. A lot of Noah Jackson. Remember Noah Jackson, the offensive guard? Like, you're like, oh, this team must be good. They got Noah Jackson. Yeah, they're 3-13. It's classic. Nice. Maybe there was a, wouldn't that be the, wouldn't a Dan Jiggetts show up on a 70s, late 70s Bears too? Noah Jackson, yeah, Dan Jiggetts?
I'm trying to find that.
Yeah, Peyton 75.
You got a roster on the 77
Bears. The 77
Bears. Yeah, look that up. Let's see what
Bashnagel.
We got. Bashnagel, you got it?
I don't have the full roster, but
Bashnagel's catching balls.
Yeah, Hartman.
Was Bashnagel,
Hartenstein.
Was Bashnagel on the, did he make it to the 85 Bears?
I think he might have left the year before.
Who am I thinking? Was it Kenny Marjoram?
He was on the Bears, going number 82 from Stanford.
And he had the black shoes, and maybe that was in the Super Bowl?
Here's a name for you, Virgil Livers.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a great
Noah
name.
Jackson,
that's
of course. Awesome.
Dennis Lick, St. Rita product.
And Doug Plank's probably on that, our guy. Yep. Doug Plank's on that squad.
Yeah.
Ringing heads.
Yeah, he was.
Yeah, they have a Peyton.
Reavy Sorry.
There we go. My guy.
Oh, man. I feel bad for these. I mean, most of the late 70s Bears have cashed in. You know, Plank's cashed in and Noah Jackson. I don't know about Noah Jackson, if he's where he's at or what's he doing, but Dan Jiggetts. But there's probably a lot of late 70s Bears that don't get on the auto dealership posters.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, Art Best.
Art Best didn't make it. Yeah. All right, moving on. 414 says, I have 8 Disney celluloids from the movie Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. What does that mean? What is a celluloid?
They're cells from the actual animation, the original reels, I guess, or the original artist cell that they would then animate from to make the movie.
Oh,
and
that sounds,
those can be big money. They
8 of them.
You know, but again,
how many per movie?
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like thousands 6, or something. Yeah, that's like crazy. So yeah,
that's cool to have though, right?
Yeah, I'll just try to
and
find.
And I would assume that they mass produce those, or if you have any of those, were those actually the stuff that was used in filming or used to make the film?
Yeah,
I don't know.
Let me see what Disney cells are going for here. I got like 100, 200, 900. They're all over the place. Let me try to Snow White.
This guy's got 8 of them.
Yeah, that's not bad.
Talking about a couple of house payments,
right? The highest one went for Lady and the Tramp, $5,500 sold for that. So,
wow!
Yeah,
jeez,
so they can be up there.
We've talked about Disney products; like they can go because they will have saturated the market at some point. But they're also brilliant at removing things off the market to increase the value of those things.
You're correct.
Is that still a thing? Is that, I remember that being where they would pull movies.
It was
certain
a thing.
Movies.
I don't know if they're still doing that. What I am noticing though is it's kind of like Barbies and Hot Wheels. The the more recent, the less value. Right. You know, you want stuff pre-80, pre-70s, and all that. Barbies,
I have a question.
Mattel.
Here's two movies that get me upset that I can never find.
Okay.
And these are movies from my childhood that I would like to show my son, but they're not available anywhere. I can't find them on any of the... And I have Hulu, I have Netflix, I have Comcast, everything you're going to get a movie, and the internet, everything.
Yeah.
One is Secret of the Nim.
Okay.
Classic. You guys remember that one with the rats? They got real smart. The rats got smart in the farm, on the bush.
Oh, yeah. I remember that.
It's classic. That's such a good book. You don't know that one, Pete? Oh man!
I remember
that's
the
a
rats.
Good one.
I remember that.
Yeah, remember the rats. I think that was the tagline.
That was the pre-production.
That movie I can never find anywhere.
Yeah.
And then the other movie is Transformers the movie, the cartoon. Remember the cartoon?
Yeah.
That's got the original. You've got the you've got the touch. You've got the power that they kind of they record in Boogie Nights.
Okay.
Remember, but when they're doing the recording, when they're that's the song from the Transformers the movie.
Okay.
And it's a cartoon movie. And I've looked everywhere. It's not online. It's not on Netflix. It's like it never existed. It is fantastic. I believe Orson Welles is in the film. He plays the planet.
Wow.
The idea is that their planet, the Transformers planet, Greg, it's in danger of being eaten by this other planet. And the Transformers have to do something about it.
That plot sounds familiar. I'm not sure if you told me that.
I might have told you last time.
But you can't get a Secret of the NIMH DVD. It has sold for in the $34 range they're going for. And it's pretty consistent in the $34 range.
608 said, pretty sure Secret of the NIMH was on Hulu. Well, maybe I missed that search for that month that it was on there. But I looked. Yeah, trust me.
Short time.
When it's dad's night to pick the movie, it's a 20 minutes of complaining that those two movies are not available.
Yep.
What even? What? Huh?
But what? Yeah, I'm finding if you just want the DVD itself without like the packaging and everything, you get it for $345 shipped to you. The
$345?
No, $3.45.
Which one is this?
Secret of the NIMH. Just the disc.
See, 847. I have Secret of the NIMH on VHS. Great movie.
There you go.
I'm just telling you right now that you guys are missing out. We'll take a break. Let's take our last break. Yep. And then check Transformers.
Yep.
Because I guarantee that one is actually worth something because it's never on any of the stuff. Transformers cartoon. Autobots die in that thing. That's hardcore. You think that Infinity Wars is hardcore? No. Transformers the movie, the original, before they went to all live action.
Nice.
That's the bomb. All right. Swap meet. Stay with us. The phone number. Greg still can't find the Transformers movie. I will say 630 says Transformers the movie is on Hoopla. Never heard of this. It's a lending service from the library. My son watches it every day. Your son's cool. He figured it out. And nice. I'm surprised. Pete, do you grew up in the time, you grew up watching, I think it was on Channel 9 or whatever, they had G.I. Joe and Transformers. Right, they had back-to-back cartoons, and it was a TV show. And at one point or another, they wrapped up all the TV storylines into a movie, like a hardcore movie. And I remember it being my favorite part about it is we went back and watched it when we were in college or whatever. We went to the Blockbuster and found it, and we all watched it. And we remember noting that there was no bass in any of the music. It's like very like Norwegian or something, like guitar in the soundtrack of it. But the film is hardcore. Transformers die. Autobots and Decepticons die. And if you watch the cartoon on TV, they never died. They just were like, oh, the fight, and then they moved on to the next thing. This was like hardcore, like let's shake some foundations.
Yeah,
and I'm telling you, man, it should be, and you can't find it. It's priceless.
I was telling you that people are selling them on like home VHS tapes. That's how rare
they
are.
Like they taped it off of something?
Yeah, they taped it off of TV or, you know, whatever.
We got to get a film festival. We got to get Nick to get that film festival.
Yeah, it's even better because then they'll have the commercials in them. You see all the old commercials.
That's right. That's where I'd be.
All right. Let's keep going. 847 says, I have Jack Brickhouse's autograph on a Cubs scorecard.
Wow. Cubs scorecard. Let's see. Yeah. Sorry, I was on the Transformers. Sidetrack.
I wonder on that, you know, like a Brickhouse autograph. I wonder what that does on a Cubs scorecard, right?
Yeah, it's better on a Cubs scorecard than a napkin or a regular piece of paper, that's for sure. So, let's see.
I love it. I took my husband's Santo jersey to the broadcast booth at Wrigley and asked Santo and Pat Hughes to sign it. They did. I gave it to my husband on Father's Day that year. Wow, awesome. Little did I know that it would be Santo's last year broadcasting Cubs game. Would that have any value now?
Yeah. Quickly, Ernie Banks and Jack Brickhouse signed Cubs program went for $100. Wow. So there's that.
There you go. We got that. And then Santo, we talked about Santo. He, towards the end of his life, he signed a lot of stuff. So it brought the value down a little bit, but he also obviously has sentimental value. Let's keep going. Mike. Mike, what do you want to brag about, Mike?
Well, I have an original mimeograph copy from 1962 of the Port Huron Statement.
Wow.
Which was the founding document of the Students for a Democratic Society.
Right. I love that one. Wow. That's great. The original?
Yeah.
Or as Lebowski
says.
Well,
it's a mimeograph. It was, it was run off on a mimeograph machine.
Did you see Big Lebowski when he goes... I was one of the original authors of the Port Huron Statement. He goes,
yeah, that's
the
right,
original
that's
one,
right.
not
it was
the
also
one
on Mad Men too. Yeah, they talked about it.
Yeah, but he says the original one, not the watered down one. That's he said. That's good. A mimeograph copy, 1962 copy of the Port Huron Statement. I just like that for the Lebowski reference.
Yeah, obviously a hard find. Port Huron Statement, the Vision Call of 1960s Revolution. New is going for like $5, $10, somewhere right there. But obviously, this is something totally different and worth
1962
more.
Yeah, 1962 copy. Awesome. Thanks, Mike. All right. We'll keep going quick here. Wrap it up. I'm getting to it. Sorry. I have Joe DiMaggio's autograph on a menu from his San Francisco restaurant.
That is awesome.
Yes. You were the police officer who pulled me over. I'll give you another one. And then I've got a 1/285th scale military tank company. My husband hand painted them. It's like little tanks. That looks cool.
Yeah, that scale I couldn't find, but it looked like a lot of three of miniature hand painted tanks was like $50 for three. The DiMaggio, Tom Seaver and DiMaggio signed menu, $125.
You got to get Seaver. You got to go find Seaver.
I know. You got to get it.
What did they
Although
have you're
to probably
do?
Looking at $75.
Did they even? I guess they did play in the same time. Because didn't Tom Seaver end his career on the White Sox?
Yeah.
Like in the 80s?
Yeah.
So how would he have played at the same time as DiMaggio? Or were they just like at a golf tournament? They're like, who else is here?
And then, right.
Like
that's
Barry Larkin saying, I'll sign it too.
Right.
And you just got like everybody.
Yeah.
Do 80s baseball players all the way down. All right, let's give the brag tonight. Let's give, an American Weathermakers desktop indoor weather station. We'll give it away tonight. Let's give it away to the DiMaggio. What do you think? Pete, do you like that one? The one with the autographed on the police book?
Police book, yeah.
Do you like that? I think that's great.
That's a good one.
Just because of the story. The story has got to be like.
Yep.
Well, if I sign it, maybe we can look the other way.
Something like that. Greg exactly. Flam at DuPage Picker, both on Facebook and Twitter, joins us every Wednesday or Thursday or Thursday mm-hmm. or Wednesday to do the swap meet. He'll be back for one more time next week, and then we're going to figure it out. I want to continue. Maybe yep. maybe there's a life for the swap meet in the morning.
That'd be awesome.
Wouldn't that be cool?
It would.
I do it like in the there may probably listeners up there are like, oh man, I have this movie. It's called Transformers. No one's ever heard of it, and that's how it'll work.
Right.
Greg, great to see you, buddy.
Thanks again.